Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome in. It's draft week, everybody. I'm back from Wales to upstate New York. My co-host, James, I'm very excited to talk to. It's been a while, James, after this long pandemic and everybody else there at Sports City. Just happy to be back and to get stuck into this draft. Get our minds back on football as, you know, as a human race, we are sort of evolving back into normality, which is great. And couldn't wish to be in a better place right now, James. Welcome.
Yeah, controversy's back in the house after a long hiatus on the ones and the twos. Let's get started.
Playing Sports City Chefs from Amazon Music.
Yeah.
Back, listen, enjoy the vibe. Sip something, light it up, enjoy the ride. Cause the Sports City Chefs is on the night. In the kitchen cooking up, they on the rise.
Sports City, Chefs, Chefs. Sports City, Sports City, Chefs, Chefs. Sports City, Sports City, Chefs, Chefs. Sports City, Sports City, Chefs,
Yes, Lord, we got a brand new president. What? Joe Biden, we riding, I pray you heaven sent. Word from the wise, my people stay ahead of
come on.
I've been relevant, trying to survive the elements. It ain't no love in these streets, these dudes telling it. Case go from cold to hot, state evidence. Kaboom, Sports City Chefs is in the room. Cooking up hot topics to put up on your spoon. They well in tune, blown like a flower in June. Superman verse MF Doom, the clouds loom. So tell a friend, it's the Sports City Chefs again. Pay attention, tune in, we on the set again.
Sports City.
Wowie. I could just picture TP driving around with that playing in his car. That's awesome. That is pretty spectacular. All week long we got you covered. Barry Jordan, Tyrone Powell, TP Timeless, James Greenwood. We got basketball shows, we got it all going on here. Time to do this. James. Here we go. James?
Hello. Hey, Gwen. Can anybody hear me? There we are.
I can hear.
So, call in number is 929-477-2759. You could be anywhere else in the world, but you're here with the chefs. So this is going to be our primary draft preview show. We're going to try to fit as much information in 2 hours as humanly possible. So let's start with talking about each position, going through set by set. Who are the guys you want to talk about? And I think we should start with the headliners in the headliners for this draft. The headliners for every draft, but this draft in particular, they seem to not only be the most valued position, but also the overall most highly talented players in this the draft class, and that is the quarterbacks. We do have a potential to have a record-breaking four quarterbacks go in the first four picks. Rodri, why don't you lead us off? Tell us a little bit about this quarterback class.
Okay, so you know we got the headliner, Trevor Lawrence. Everybody's talking about what's going to go on after Trevor Lawrence. Where's Penny Sewell going to go? Where's Kyle Pitts? Is he coming in? Nobody's talking about this kid, right? He's a generational quarterback. He's Andrew Luck. He's Peyton Manning. He's Mike Vick. He's that guy, and we've been waiting for him. For years, at 15 years of age, he's a freshman in high school. He was starting in high school at 15 against 18-year-olds. And he only lost two games in high school. He lost two in college. This kid's coming into the NFL, and he lost four games. He's known from the Elite 11. He grew up 20 miles away from Justin Fields. So their competition has been there from the start. And that's only just going to continue. as they come into the NFL. Something I'm very excited to see, because I started watching them at the Elite 11s with Trent Dilfer, Yogi Roth. So I've seen them come right through the ranks and just seen them go to college and how they played. And it's unbelievable. I mean, the talent level is off the charts. If anybody, just go to YouTube, put Trevor Lawrence, Elite 11, and watch him up there in Oregon with Trent Dilfer and watch what he does. The guy is, he's a left, right? He's absolutely phenomenal. 6'6", 220 pounds. I mean, he can run. That game against Ohio State, what he got, sorry, it was against Georgia, what he got whacked, right? And he got hit hard. And everybody wanted to see how he'd come back. A lot of people thought that he broke a collarbone. He gets up, and he's running. You know, he takes off with his legs. Reminds me a lot of Andrew Luck in that way. Andrew Luck could do the same. Andrew Luck had the same measurables as Cam Newton at the combine, which not a lot of people sort of think about, but that's how athletic Andrew Luck was. Trevor Lawrence, the same type of numbers, same type of quarterback, but he's got such a good head on his shoulders. I think, you know, and that's where it's the top 5 inches, you know, that really separates him, I think. And he's going to lose. That's what's going to happen when he comes in the NFL. He's going to start losing. And it's how he reacts to that. And I think he's built for it, you know. I think he's ready to lose some games and understand his mistakes. And I think he's got the best head coach for that as well, as the game is evolving into more of a college game than it was. So I think that's going to help him. And I think Urban Meyer is going to help that as well. And I think they're, you know, just assuming he goes number one to Jacksonville, I think it's going to be good for him.
Yeah, and the big thing about Trevor Lawrence is that not only does he have the head on his shoulders, but he's not only does he have the athleticism to be able to scramble around the pocket and maybe even tuck it down and run, which we've seen him do a couple times in college, but the big thing is his arm talent. He has the ability to hit that 15-yard out. He can hit the 9. He can hit any route that you have on the field and throw on a rope. Now, there's a big difference between being able to hit that route and actually be able to hit it with timing. And that's what Trevor Lawrence has that's better than any other prospect in this really good quarterback group.
Yeah, it is a really good group as well. A friend of mine back here was sort of ranking it of all time, you know, and you can remember like 83 was the Elway draft. You know, Dan Marino, John Elway, and those, and you know, seeing us up around that, so that's very, very high praise. I think we'll see how that goes. And you know, it's hard not to mention the movie Remember the Titans, right?
Yeah,
with the kid Sunshine. So can you imagine in Jacksonville, Sunshine and all that? He's definitely going to be here in that next year, I'm thinking. And what happens to the backup kid now, Minshew Mania? What happens to that down there? Do you think he's on the trading block, or do you think they're going to keep him around? Do you think he'd be happy to stay around there, James?
Gardner Minshew, I don't think that they would be able to. He's a starting caliber quarterback, but he's a back end starting caliber quarterback. In Jacksonville, I just don't see them being able to get value for them. They'd be much better served keeping Gardner Minshew as a backup. And just in case something happens to Lawrence, or let's say he doesn't pan out in year one like he's supposed to, I'd be really surprised if he didn't. But let's just say things happen. At least you'll have a starting caliber backup.
Sure.
And then you just see if he has any value in that trade market. But I just don't see it. Like right now, teams are actually, this is a buyer's market on quarterbacks, as weird as that sounds, because there are these quarterbacks that are draftable, ready to go, and then there are other better quarterbacks available right now in the selling market, like your Teddy Bridgewaters are, I think, better than Gardner Minshew. And then Jimmy Garoppolo is probably also going to be available from San Francisco once they grab their quarterback at 3. So there's a long way to go down before you hit Gardner Minshew. the only team I could currently see Gardner Minshew starting for that's not going to be drafting a quarterback this year is either the Saints, maybe, or perhaps the Chicago Bears. And I don't think either one of those two, I don't think either of those two are currently in the quarterback market right now.
I agree. I think the Bears have got a special plan for somebody. But we talk about that during the draft thing, during the draft, that's what we're going to do. But I now just going through them and not going off what everybody else thinks either. I mean, for me, Justin Fields is number two. I know Zach Wilson is going to be drafted probably too. But I just feel Justin Fields has earned it, you know. He's earned it on the field and off the field. And I don't know why. It happens every year that a player, for some reason, when the season ends, he goes from a draft rank and then it just drops as people start writing columns and start talking about it. And it happens every year and it does my head. It bugs me because, you know, this epilepsy thing is coming out about Justin Fields now as well. And he's played with it since he was 15 and now it's an issue. Do you know, now he's turning pro, it's an issue. I just don't like it, but we'll talk about Zach Wilson. I'll keep it as Zach Wilson, but Justin Fields is my number two ranked quarterback, and I just got to be honest with it, even though Zach Wilson will probably get drafted first. But Zach Wilson, BYU, 6'3", 203 pounds, and he's a nifty little runner too, and he's gutsy. His footwork is great, and he's got that arm. And at his pro day, James, I don't know if you noticed that, he did that throw back against the grain when he's running left and he throws back to the right, the old Sam Darnold throw from last year. And people saying, oh, that's all Sam Darnold has done as a Jet, right? And, like, you know, you obviously don't watch a lot of football because Sam Darnold's a better quarterback than that. And I think Sam Darnold's going to be successful in Carolina too. But anyway, let's talk about Zach Wilson.
And that's kind of the, like, interesting thing about this is that I can see why the Jets moved on from Sam Darnold to Zach Wilson. Even if you actually believe that they are mirror image quarterbacks, the thing is that Zach Wilson's going to have an additional four additional more years at the at the low-cost quarterback quarterback rate versus Sam Darnold, who you're going to have to re-sign next year. So it's even if you consider them the same or at least a similar skill set, that's fine. But you're trading off that that low cap value for more years. That's kind of what you're getting back in Zach Wilson. This is smart cap play, and let the Carolina Panthers re-sign Sam Darnold, assuming he works out in Carolina, which is not a guarantee at all. So Zach Wilson, I think, instantly becomes a starter. Is he better than Justin Fields? It's questionable. And I think that, like, when we get to this next, like, Trevor Lawrence is in a class by himself, but in this 2, 3, 4, and I'm not even going to put Mac Jones in there because I think that Mac Jones is a tier below these other three guys, in my opinion. But this next set of guys, I think, is interchangeable. Like, it's what flavor you like, you know? Zach Wilson, all of these guys have the same yeah buts, kind of, because they all played with significantly better talent than what it was that they were than what they were playing against. And that includes Trey Lance. Trey Lance was playing with some NFL caliber talent, playing against a bunch of guys who just don't, you know? And then, you know, Justin Fields was also playing high-end talent, but was also probably easily the strongest team in the Big Ten. So it makes it very interesting. right now I could juggle between, I think both Fields and Wilson are better than Trey Lance, but I could easily see where people would like Zach Wilson, just based on Zach Wilson has a higher floor than Justin Fields. Fields kind of rode the additional talent that he had at Ohio State, and the fact that his talent was just that much better than what he was playing against, that he never had to make those additional reads that a lot of these other guys had to do in the and what he will have to do in the pros. That's kind of the Zach Wilson, Justin Fields juggle right now. But it's really going to depend on landing spot, which one of these two guys are more successful at the next level.
Yeah, I think it's already a done deal with the Jets for Zach Wilson. But I'm just saying, you know, he had Christensen, Barrington, Schultz. He had some good offensive linemen in front of him, just like Mac Jones did, as I did, you know, Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields. And you can't take that away from a Mac Jones either, that he had like Devontae Smith, Jalen Waddle, Ruggs, you know, Jerry Jeudy. You can't take away that he had that talent, because, you know, just because he had that talent to help him, it doesn't mean that he, you know, necessarily is a worse quarterback for it. You know, look at Joe Burrow, you know. Joe Burrow, to me, proved himself last year. I'm with all the talent he had around him. And I think it's the Joe Burrow effect as well that we're seeing, that, you know, that you can be at a national championship quarterback behind a team, you know, that's successful, and now come into the NFL and also be successful, which, you know, hasn't been done really quite often. It hasn't been done often at all. It's very rare. But I think we're going to be seeing a lot more of that. Are you having a text messages through there, bro? Can you hear that?
Yeah, it's going off the hook. I'm going to just turn off this phone right now.
I thought that was TP messaging to get me off air or something. I wonder if I'm wrong.
No. Although it could be. I haven't looked at the screen in a minute, but. And we do have a caller in queue, calling in from the 951. Welcome to the draft day dinner. Tell us your name and what you want to talk about.
Hey, what's going on, guys? This is Brian from California. I just wanted to stop by and chat with you boys.
Brian,
talking the draft, man. What's up, Brian?
Welcome, Brian. Hello.
What's up, James?
How are you doing, man? I remember we was doing this, Bright, a couple of years ago. I can't remember exactly when it was. It was about 10 years ago, maybe.
The three amigos are back together again.
So thus far, we've been talking strictly the quarterback position. We'll probably have to speed run a couple of these other positions if we want to get to a mock draft later on. But right now, quarterback position, you are a San Francisco 49ers fan. I know this for a fact. How are you feeling about the rumors that Mac Jones is going number 3?
Well, obviously, I've been listening for a while, James, and I got your take, and I got Rodri's take. And I'll tell you, I mean, you know that I break down a fair amount of film. And I will tell you, in my opinion, I think that this is the best quarterback class that we've had in probably 10 years. And I say that with a grain of salt, because I understand that Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes was in the same class, but I'm saying where they were when they were drafted and what the expectation was. I'm saying if you put Tua Tagovailoa in this draft class, I think he's probably drafted 6th. Like this class is that good. It's a loaded class. I think you have several guys that are going to start for a long time. But I will tell you guys, I do have one stark difference to that of James, and I will tell you this. So I don't think that there's such a large disparity between Lawrence and Wilson. I've seen both of these guys play. I've been watching Zach Wilson since he was a freshman at BYU. You guys know, and I'm sure Sports City knows, I'm a big USC fan. And I unfortunately got to watch his heroics even at a very, very young age. He was a very talented passer. I think what you're seeing with Zach Wilson, the thing that's hard for the average fan to evaluate is if you just turn on a highlight film, you're only getting one piece of the puzzle, right, gentlemen? You're only getting where they're at now. You don't see where they came from. Where Trevor Lawrence came from when he came in to college as a five-star athlete, him and Justin Fields were ranked 1 and 2, is light years different than where they were when they came in. Zach Wilson was an afterthought. And I got to tell you, if you're just talking sheerly progression at the QB position, I don't think anyone's improved more over the last 2.5 years than Zach Wilson. I think he's absolutely made up the ground on Trevor Lawrence. I think it's much closer than most people want to agree. I think Zach Wilson is much better at the off-platform type throws. I think they're both very good at making reads. I think they're both very good at putting the placing the ball accurately. I feel like Justin Fields has not matured as far as a passer as much as some of these other guys. I watched Justin Fields. I've watched high school film on Justin Fields, and he is a phenomenal, phenomenal athlete. And he's a good thrower of the football. But he still makes a lot of very questionable decisions as a passer. And so here's what I will say, and I'll try to keep this as short as possible, and I apologize, boys. So I have Trevor Lawrence 1-2 with Zach Wilson, and I think it's extremely close. I think that those guys, in any of the last 5 draft classes, they'll probably go number 1 if they're in a class by themselves. Followed closely at number 3, I have Mac Jones, and I'm going to tell you why. So in order to be an elite player, I think you have to have elite traits, right? You can't be elite. Now, he's never going to be what Trey Lance could be. He's never going to be what Justin Fields could be. But at the same time, what he does better than anyone in this class is process information. If you watch the games and watch how quickly he cycles from his first to his second to his third, checking down to the back, he is absolutely elite. And that's something that you could say about Burrow. I know that Rodri had mentioned Burrow. That's what Burrow is truly, truly excels at.
Yeah.
He's not a phenomenal athlete. What he's good at is he's able to dissect information and he's able to process it and react quickly. And I think that that's what Kyle Shanahan has fallen in love with. And I do think that this will be Mac Jones. I think that he's in love with somebody that can process information quickly, who's a former tennis star that has really good feet, doesn't have he has functional mobility and functional quickness, but he's not never going to be Trey Lance or Justin Fields. But he's a guy that is going to start in this league for probably the next 15 years, and he can absolutely win a Super Bowl. I think the highest upside quarterback in the entire draft is Trey Lance. I mean, you got to think about this, boys. He's 20 years old. He just turned 20.
I know,
we are barely pulling back the surface on who this kid can be, and he could literally be Randall Cunningham. That's who I think of when I watch this guy. I know I've heard other comparisons, Lamar Jackson. I think of Randall Cunningham because of the creativity, the ability to run with the ball the way that he does. I think of Randall Cunningham. I think he's much more clever, I guess is a good word to use, as opposed to Lamar Jackson if you go back to watching him in college. And I understand that there's a disparity in talent level. And then for me, last but definitely not least, I still think he's a top 10 pick, is Justin Fields. I think Ohio State, if you look over the course of the last 10 years, whether it's Jones, Barrett, Troy Smith, all the quarterbacks that they've had come through there that have either been Heisman hopefuls or drafted really high, maybe this is an unfair knock on him, but I do think that that is a program that simplifies the offense, that basically only makes you read one side of the field, and therefore limits the amount that the quarterback's responsible for. Keep in mind that a kid like Trey Lance, although at a lower level of competition, he's calling his own protections at the line of scrimmage. Like,
yeah.
All that kind of stuff has to be factored in.
Carson Wentz, right? Same school? Same.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
So this my big problem with Mac Jones is that I fear what he's going to do. I have yet, like, when he throws an out route, and I've watched a couple of games focusing specifically on 10 and 15 yard outs, they get there, but they get there really slowly. Now, if you are in an offense like the Patriots, and to a lesser extent, but still there for the 49ers, if Mac Jones goes to one of those two teams, he has a much better chance of success because of how those offenses function. A lot of their stuff is like centralized in the middle of the field, and they don't throw those exterior routes too many times. But the and I did. Just to be completely fair, I did fall into this trap with Josh Allen as well, where he had some really cold spots in his throwing tree, and that made me drop his grade a lot more than I probably
right.
should have. But the same thing is true with Mac Jones, is that there are some areas in that route tree that he just does not hit with the consistency that he does in the middle of the field. And that makes me very nervous, depending on what team he ends up going to.
Yeah. And I think honestly, James, I think that's, you know, somewhat fair. Although my contention to that is I personally think, and I think people will see it as we move forward. Listen, he doesn't have a howitzer like Mahomes, you know, he doesn't have a Hauser like Allen, but at the same time, you know, there's 30 other quarterbacks, you know, or 28 other quarterbacks in the league that also does not have a cannon like that. Drew Brees has never been known for his arm strength. And you know what? He's been able to function just fine. And that's because he plays with anticipation. He plays the game with a high level of certainty, and he's able to process information very quickly. I'm just giving a comp. Listen, I'm not saying Mac Jones, Drew Brees, but what I'm saying is you do not need to be the biggest freak athlete or have the strongest arm to play QB. The two traits that you absolutely have to have to play QB, listen, Jamarcus Russell had the strongest arm the games ever saw, and he absolutely flamed out, because the bottom line is the two traits you have to have is you have to be able to process information, and you have to be able to deliver the ball accurately. And I don't think anybody can dispute that Mac Jones does that.
Hey, I've always said accuracy is the main one. And like you said, bro, you haven't got to have a howitzer these days, the way it's played. It's so, the college game is creeping into this pro game so much, you know, these spread offenses. It's, you know, accuracy is everything. And like you said, it's the processing of information. And you look at Steve Sarkisian, what he's been able to do with Mac Jones. I think that's a massive thing for him as well, coming in. Kyle Shanahan will love that. It's just being able to read back what he's given him in a playbook. And, you know, which was Jamarcus Russell's biggest problem, was that he didn't like reading playbooks, you know? So, you know, if you're going to do that, you ain't going to last long in the NFL. But,
go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, just going into the top five, though, you know, who your top five are, I think for me, Trevor Lawrence is way out in front of everybody. And then you come back then to the other four being, you know, pretty much not much in between them.
So, yeah, so
I will
for
tell
me,
you, boys, the guy that has the most upside – sorry, James, I didn't mean to cut you off. The guy who has the most upside, and 5 years from now we might be saying, I can't believe he wasn't taken number one overall – is Trey Lance, and it's not even close.
I would agree with that. I would say that Lawrence is my clear-cut number one. Wilson's my number two. I think Fields is above Lance for me. Lance has a higher upside, but I like Field better than Lance just out of the gate. Then Mac Jones, number five, just because of the – I mean, right now we saw another guy who is very good at anticipation – very good at his accuracy. And Teddy Bridgewater just get out of Carolina due to his lack of athleticism. And I think that Mac Jones has those same problems. Before we leave the quarterbacks right now, the next three, I think we can all agree, are Mills, Trask, and Mond, Kellen Mond from Texas A&M, in no particular order. Do you guys believe that any of these three guys become long-term NFL starters, meaning like not injury concern
yes.
NFL starters, but and who's your guy on that?
If I had to pick one, I would say Mills, although I think Mills and Mond have the traits to be long-term. The thing that scares me with Trask is it's not a lack of athleticism. It's a lack of mobility. And he throws a good ball, but he has the same problem that Justin Fields did. If you really look and dissect that Florida offense, there really isn't a whole lot of reads that are taking place. So could he do it? Yes. But the guys that I feel more comfortable with, Dave Mills, we know Mills ran a pro-style offense there at Stanford. We know what that offense looks like and what the quarterbacks are asked to do. And I think Mond is a sneaky good pick. Somebody's going to be picking this kid up, and whoever the starter is, they're going to have to beat him off with a stick in order to prevent him from taking a job in a year or two.
Yeah, that's I'll add another. What about Jamie Newman? I like Jamie Newman for a long time. I know he lost a little bit of ability. It's not enough to write them off then. But like, yeah, Kellen Mond and Kyle Trask, I like them both also. And David Mills, like you said, David Shaw knows what he's doing there at Stanford, and he's gonna come in. I think they're all gonna have a shot. They're all gonna have a chance at least. And let's be honest, guys. You look like last year at Jordan Love getting drafted in Green Bay. I don't think like being picked in the latter part of the first round, second round means that you're looking to start a kid now these days. You know, you can put him on the trading block. Look at Josh Rosen. Josh Rosen was drafted 10th overall. He's traded the season after. He's now a 49er. I think he's got a good chance in San Francisco as well, Brian. But I'm just saying that, mm-hmm. you know, because you're getting drafted early, like, it doesn't mean that you're necessarily penciled in to start. If you can't cut it, then you can get traded out the year after now, the way it is. So it's going to be interesting to see how it lays out. But I do agree, on your first point, whether this class is going to be a good one. I 83 was a great class. So and then you look at the team coach, Akili Smith, Donovan McNabb, Dante Culpepper, that class, you know, 99. And then you wonder, you know, they all looked like they were going to be brilliant. But then look what happened, you know.
Well,
and
don't
you
forget
them.
About 84.
So for me, I think I'm right there with Brian on this one. Davis Mills, I think, is probably the most likely out of those next set of three to be a long-term NFL starter. Kellen Mond, the one thing that scares me most about him, and the thing that's hardest to fix on a quarterback after college, is his throwing motion has a very low release point. Yes, he's got the height to make that work, but it's something that always scares me when we're talking mm-hmm. about quarterbacks at the next level, is that it's a nice compact, he'll get it out quick, but it's the path of travel is just too low for me, and that's going to lead to batted down balls, unless he's in a system where they run out of the shotgun more often than not. And that's where I could see him being a guy that could step up into a starter role and actually even excel as a sneaky good third, fourth round pick. Kind of like Jalen Hurts did with the Philadelphia Eagles. So Trask is there, Kellen Mond is there. Kyle Trask, I think I'm right there with everybody else on that. I think he's got better physical tools than Mac Jones, not by a lot, but by enough to say it. But he he's not there yet. He'd have to develop into a better quarterback before he became a starter, in my opinion. I'm going to open it up just for any last statements on the quarterbacks. I think I'm going to skip running backs for now, maybe come back to them later, but I want to hit wide receivers next. But Rodri, if you have anything else on the quarterbacks, feel free to throw that out.
Quick bit of breaking news from Adam Schefter. You know, a big guy for all these quarterbacks in the Elite 11 is Trent Dilfer. Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch have just pledged $49,000 to the Trevin Dilfer Foundation. It honors his son, Trent, lost years ago, and it's a great way to donate. Fans can donate and go to Adam Schefter's page. It's on there, and I think it's a great foundation because that guy, these quarterbacks are like his kids, you know, and he's got such a big heart and he's such a good coach, and I think he deserves all the you know, that he gets, because he does deserve it. And yeah, I like stuff like that, you know, and it's good that that's been set up and that bring in notice to.
All right, Brian, anything else before we move on to wide receivers?
I will keep it super short here, boys. The team that drafts Trey Lance, when you consider the way that the preseason is shortened, and you consider, you know, people opting out due to COVID, when this kid finally steps on the field, it is going to have been almost 2 years since this kid has taken a meaningful snap. People are evaluating this kid based on what he did over a year ago. So just keep that in mind. He's not the player that you see on tape. He's a very bright individual. And I think a lot of fans are going to be shocked at what this kid does in the NFL.
All right, we're going to move on to the wide receivers. Skip other running backs for now. We might come back to them later if we have the time. Wide receivers, the top three are, I don't think anybody really disagrees, Ja'Marr Chase, Jalen Waddle, Devonta Smith. So that's where I want to start. First, I guess we'll go around the horn and say, how do you rank those three? Do you like Chase better than Waddle and Smith? Is Smith your guy? Brian, I'll give you the first snap at that.
I'm going to keep this really simple, and this kind of goes back to the quarterback thing. And I this is where I have a hard time, right? Because when you're rating these guys, you're rating them based off of their production, guys, but at the same time, you're also rating them off of what you think they're going to be at the next level. So based off of those criteria, I have Chase 1, Waddle 2, and Smith 3, like you just said it, James. Now, I think Smith is the most talented pass catcher in this year's draft. The problem that I have, I can't wrap my head around drafting a 166-pound wide receiver who doesn't have a lot of room to get any bigger and putting him on the outside against press-covered corners at the NFL level. Like, I think, like, it's going to be difficult, but I'm trying to fathom a way of him not being a slot guy, and I just don't see it. Now, I could be wrong. I've been proven wrong before. Steve Smith was a guy that was sub-5'10 that managed to make it work. And you know what? I hope for Smith that that's the case, because he's by far my favorite receiver to watch. But because of the exact thing that we just talked about, you have to forecast what these guys are going to do at the next level. I have to go Chase, who I think is a legitimate prototype number one, Waddle, and then Smith, based off of that criteria.
Yeah, I got Smith. So I think Smith is going to be better than Jerry Rice. When his career is done, I listen to this, guys, and this is the back, right, in about 10 years' time. I ain't crazy. I swear, I've seen this kid. He goes up against SEC corners every week, and, you know, none of those can stop it. You know, I just think Devontae Smith is a word for it, right? And you've seen them film replacements, right? The word is wiry, and you've got to be Welsh to say it like that. Gene Hackman going wiry about the kicker. I remember Reece Evans, right? Wiry.
Yep.
And that's what Devonta Smith is. He's wiry. And he's deceptively strong. He's deceptive. Like Steve Smith is a good example, because what he done with New York from USC, right? They did move him around, and he found his way in the slot. But he's got the best pair of hands I think I've ever seen. I don't think I've seen him drop a ball. He's that good. His routes are so crisp. He's mentally prepared for the next level, I think. When Jalen Waddle went down, that was his team. He took over. And I'm not saying he took over. He actually took over college football. And I know it's at the college level, but week in, week out, he was going against the best. And just his attitude, how focused he was in the game, what Nick Saban was saying about him. And, you know, it goes back to that pass from Tua in the national championship game to win against Georgia. That's when the kid came on the scene. And ever since that day, he's been doing it week in, week out. And, you know, and I know he's had Jerry Jeudy, Waddle, Ruggs, and the likes next to him, but he's managed to do it on his own as well. And I think I can't say enough good things about him. I just watching him play, you know, when you just see it in somebody, and he's special. I saw it in Le'Veon Bell as well. Those two players, just two players I've seen with my own eyes that are telling me that they are something different, you know, something special. And I got him leaps and bounds in front of Chase and Waddle. I mean, he's my number one player in the whole draft. That's how much I think of Devontae Smith. Yeah, you can't deny Jalen Waddle's speed then, and also Jamar Chase, what he's been able to do at LSU. I mean, they're all champions. These kids, they're all good players, and I think you're gonna add in about three or four more out of this class. It's an incredible class of receivers, but Smith is way out there in front of Jalen Waddle and Jamar Chase. Then just not far after.
I'm going to agree with Brian, at least at the top. Jamar Chase, I think, is the number one wide receiver. I think physically he's better. I think that his hands are perfectly fine. I think he has all the talent to be a number one wide receiver in the league and probably a Pro Bowl level number one wide receiver in the league. So Chase is my number one. I put Devonta Smith as number two. I definitely understand the concerns that come with a guy that's 166 pounds. But the one thing that happens when you watch this guy on tape is that press corners don't get their hands on him long enough to redirect him on his route. And that's something special to do with his quickness. I'm not saying that'll definitely translate to the next level, but it's definitely something worth looking at. Because almost all of these SEC corners that are going up against a number one wide receiver are always going to be NFL caliber corners. So they might be lower level NFL caliber corners, but when we're talking about going against top competition, Devonta Smith has done it. Then I'll go with Waddle as my number three guy, for all the reasons that we've already talked about. The next set of guys probably runs like five deep, in my opinion. Like, I think Kadarius Toney from Florida is there, Rashard Bateman's there, Elijah Moore's there, Terrence Marshall from LSU is there, and Rondell Moore. And I'll also throw Dyami Brown into that next set of guys. Obviously, I don't want you guys to rank the full set, but just give me some thoughts, and Rodri, I'll let you go first on this one. Give me some thoughts on that next set of guys.
Yeah, this is where I think the Tyreek Hill thing comes in. You know, when you've just got that natural speed, I think you got a few guys there, like the Tonys, the Rondell Moores. And, you know, add in a guy like Tylan Wallace as well from Oklahoma State, who I think is going to be a good Tutu Atwell. I know Tutu Atwell is only 5'9", 165, but he can shift, you know. You got some motor on him. Elijah Moore, another one, ridiculously fast. But, you know, a copycat league, right? We know it is. And it's like the way offenses are now, everybody, you know, if you've got a gun at quarterback, you're looking to copy the Chiefs. And I think we're going to see that. I think a lot of these guys are going to go earlier just because of that. And yeah, so for me, you know, Tony, I love him as a route runner. He belongs probably later in the first round, I think. And then, you know, the likes of Rashad Bateman. I think we're going to see early second round. But I think we're going to get about five, maybe six first round wide receivers. And then just a run of them then in the second round as well. And, you know, Amon-Ra St. Brown, like he's just players like that. We're not even, you know, we don't even talk about Diami Brown, Seth Williams, these guys, they you know, great college careers, great talents. Yeah, it's another good class of receivers. But again, as we see in the college game and the spread offenses become, you know, prevalent in the NFL, we're going to see these receivers get drafted early and be in need, as we are with corners then as well, unfortunately. So it's just going to be, you know, that's the way the game is now.
All right, Brian, what are your thoughts on that, like, second level of guys? And if there's a guy I missed out on, feel free to let me know.
No, I think you guys both did an excellent job of picking those guys up. I think when you're talking about, like, the quote-unquote next group, like, what I try to look for is, you know, difference makers, and difference makers can come in, you know, all shapes and sizes. You know, like Roderick just mentioned, there's several guys that are very fast and shifty, but I'm going to go in the opposite direction. Number one, I really like Rashad Bateman. I know he mentioned him. I think he actually goes in round one. I think he's super talented. There's not a single aspect of his game that I think he's subpar at. Very good at contested catches, very good after the catch. Very good run blocker as well, which I think is often overlooked when you're looking at wide receivers. He's a guy that could probably come in right away and contribute as a solid, you know, number one or number two because of his ability to run block. And then the other guy that I'm going to mention is, look, I'm mentioning just kind of, you know, a quote-unquote athletic freak, and that's Terrence Marshall. You're talking about a guy that's 6'3", 6'4", 220 pounds, played on the opposite side of Chase. You know, everybody talks about, you know, what this kid did. But keep in mind, this kid played the slot. This kid played out wide. He played, you know, H-back. He played a ton of different positions for LSU. Very good hands, you know, averaged almost 16 yards per reception, 10 touchdowns, had over 700 yards receiving. I think he's the type of guy, though, that somebody's going to come up for, because especially in this draft class, gentlemen, there's not a lot of guys that are 6'2 plus. If you're looking for one of those big, you know, big, tall, lean frame wide receivers that could be a potential red zone target, I think, you know, he becomes very intriguing.
See, yeah. Rashad Bateman kind of like reminds me a lot of Neil Carey, which scares me a little bit, because I really liked Neil Carey, but he didn't turn out well in the NFL. Now, was that because of the team he went to, or was it because he was never that good to begin with? And that's really hard to parse through the weeds. I am kind of a big fan of Elijah Moore. I think he has that ability to go up and get the ball. He comes from a program that tends to develop NFL caliber wide receivers in Ole Miss. So that's kind of my next guy. And Kadarius Toney, I've heard, and I don't know if this is true or not, but I've heard quite a bit about some character concern issues that definitely throw him a little lower in the in the set for me. As far as guys outside of the set, the guys that we're looking at in rounds like 3, 4 or later, I am really interested to see what Jalen Darden does from North Texas. His hands are not perfect, but we're talking about guys that will probably play in the slot at the next level. And I think this draft class is ripe with a whole bunch of guys. And I just can't see why I would take Rondale Moore in late round one, early round two, where I could get Jalen Darden in late round three, early round four, or a Cade Johnson at from South Dakota State in that late third, early fourth round, wavelength. And that kind of puts me a little sour on a Rondale Moore, which I think is kind of a lower guy, especially with the injury concerns that Rondale Moore has hit. Don't get me wrong, he's significantly faster, probably by about like a tenth of a second on their 40. But at the end of the day, you're paying a premium for that extra tenth of a second, I think. One last time around, is there anybody that we haven't mentioned yet that you think is like long-term wide receiver one, wide receiver two, or even a long-term upper echelon slot guy? And Brian, I'll put you on first on that one.
There are so many guys in this year's draft that could potentially be that guy. I'm going to give you guys one guy, and this one's like, this is way out of left field, right? So Cade Johnson, North Dakota State. I watched tape on Trey Lance, and it's one of those things, I'm sure you guys have experienced it, where you turn on tape to watch a defensive tackle and the defensive, you know, the edge rusher or the defensive end kind of pops off, or the linebacker pops off. I was watching tape on Lance, and every game that I watched, Johnson, whether it's in the running game, you know, like I said, I really like a complete receiver, whether it's in the running game, whether it's blocking for other wide receivers downfield when they catch a quick slant, watching him run down the field to help out, or just being able to create separation and really, really fight for extra yards. Dude, he's got the drive, the determination, and just kind of the swag, if you will. I think Johnson could be a sneaky good, we're going to say, you know, probably, I'm going to say round four, round five guy that somebody could strike gold on.
Well, that's a good show, Brian. Good senior from North Dakota State. Yeah, South Dakota State, sorry. I mentioned Tylan Wallace. I think Tylan Wallace is going to be a star. I think with Rondale Moore, there's so much you can do with him, James. But let's go deeper. And I'm going to stick on the speed aspect, right, Bri? I'm going to stay with Anthony Schwartz or Auburn. I mean, this guy is lightning fast. I mean fast, like. And there's a difference between speed and game speed. This is game speed quick. And I think if he can find the right offense, or if a coach can just grab hold of him and coach him up a little bit, he's going to need that. Then he can be a good sleeper, maybe third, fourth round. But like you said, you know, his guys we haven't mentioned, like Amari Rogers is another one who's got so much talent. Nico Collins is another one who's got so much talent.
Nico Collins is an excellent one, Rodri.
Yeah, it's such a good class, Brian. Yeah, it's like I think
Nico Collins, you know, let's just say this real quick. I think Nico Collins, somebody's going to get an absolute slam dunk, because when I watch Nico Collins, I can't help but think to myself, Darren Waller. If it was me, I'm taking that guy. He blocks pretty dang well for a big wide receiver like that. I think he would be a lights-out tight end. Move tight end. You put him as a move guy, allow him a year or two to fill out, because he's still – if you look at his frame, he's got plenty of room to fill out. I'd let this kid fill out to about 235. I think he'd be a phenomenal tight end.
Actually, especially the way, like, again, what offenses are like now. You know, a guy like Kyle Pitts can come in and sort of do it. What kind of guy? It's interesting. It's so interesting. And we haven't mentioned a guy like Daz Newsome, who gets, you know, a start. You go to North Carolina, you watch the Tar Heels. They'll have a 5-minute promo on just him at the start of the game. And we haven't mentioned him yet. It's like, that's how loaded this draft class is at receiver. It's phenomenal.
For the record, I also do really like Daz Newsome. Just for the record.
I mean,
but this is like the really crazy thing about this wide receiver class, is why I wanted to hit them second, is that like right now we're probably talking about guys that are like 10, 15 players deep on this wide receiver class, and there's potential that every single one of these guys become starters. Like, probably not all of them, but, like, a good number of them are, like, guys that could be legitimate wide receivers 1 through 3 somewhere in there in this draft class. It's probably one of the deepest wide receiver draft classes that we've had in a long time.
And one last thing, James. I just want to mention, let's not forget Blake Prohl. I'm a huge fan of kids whose either fathers or brothers or uncles have already kind of went through the process. You have that pedigree, you know, plays the same position as his father did. I think Blake Prohl is a late round guy that's going to end up sticking.
Look at his father as well, Brian. I mean, Ricky Prohl was the last one off the bus, right? And then he just
absolutely.
Like every game he'd show up for the Rams and like win Super Bowls. yeah, you're right.
As long as we're throwing one more name out, I want to go with Tamarian Terry from Florida State. He's a guy that's going to fall out of the first 2 days because of injury concerns. If that is taken care of and like, if he remains healthy, this is going to be a guy that's going to be a major steal in the backgrounds. He has a decent speed. He has really good hands. He runs his routes very crisply. I think this is a guy that probably could be somewhere in like the 20th wide receiver selected range that could end up being a lot better than his draft position.
Yeah. That's an hour we've done, James. We're going to go position for position. That's how detailed we are, though. I like to look at it in the positive. Like, you know, we can't just mention 5 and then leave it. We've got to actually go into real depth. Like, awesome.
So I think we're going to skip the mock draft for this point. At this point, I think we should just go straight through the positions. I don't think we're going to have time for this mock draft later. So I think we're going to move to offensive tackle next, just in case we want to push through that. Penei Sewell and Rashawn Taylor are pretty much the guys heavily considered 1 and 2. Then there's these guys who kind of hit play and Rashawn Taylor, Rashawn Slater is another guy that's kind of like thought of as this kind of hybrid guy. He's probably going to play offensive tackle at the next level, but if he flames out there, he'll be a perfectly fine guard, which is not true about every single player on the tackle list. Elijah Vera Tucker from USC is another one of those guys who's like a hybrid kind of deal. And then Christian Darrisaw from Virginia Tech and Tevin Jenkins, I think, has an opportunity to be in that late first one, early round two set of guys. Sewell is considered by far the offensive tackle one. But Rodri, I'm going to go right back to you first on this one. What do you think about like the first round, maybe even early second round guys for the offensive tackle position?
Yeah, just to say as well, Brian, really good to have you, man. I just always enjoyed your takes, and you haven't lost anything, bro. You still got it. Just to say, I'm going to go straight to Penei Sewell. I love him. I think he belongs in Cincinnati. He's Anthony Munoz again, you know. He's that guy, and they need him. Because Joe Burrow can't last without 2 tackles, and they got one in Jordan Williams. I think Penei Sewell drops to them at 5 is a perfect pick. Please, Cincinnati, take him. Just take him. And he's going to be there for 10 years, and he's going to protect your franchise. And I think he's going to be a dominant mauler in the run game. Just a phenomenal athlete. And he's got that, you know, Polynesian Samoan heritage, which I love. and he's just a great kid and a good player. And his brother coming through as well, a linebacker at Oregon, is another good one. So good family of athletes. But, so Sewell, for me then is Slater. You look at Slater, he's more of a more technically gifted, probably just because of coaching, I think, but also because Sewell with that mean streak, you know, that he hasn't really matured into that technical beast yet. But I think Sewell will do that, and he'll overtake Slater in that respect. But Slater, you know, 6'4", 315, out of the Northwest, and is a good, you know, he's a bright kid, and he's gonna do well. And then Dashaw, you mentioned Vera Tucker, Allo Vera Tucker, we call him in the, my buddy calls him in the UK, Mr. Mike Carlson, he's great with names. Allo Vera Tucker, that's his name for me. Bright, your school, USC, so a good one. But a couple of guys I want to mention who should be up there, Brent, because of injury. Walker Little is one. Walker Little, Stanford. Brian, we mentioned Stanford. Great school for quarterbacks, but also offensive linemen. And for me, Walker Little would be in the top 15 of this draft had he not been injured and had he been playing consistently. And I think he's definitely a good pick for somebody, especially at 6'7", 320, and, you know, very nimble on his feet. Got great technique. And I think, you know, the more football he plays now, the better he's gonna come and just get healthier. I think he's great. And then Alex Leatherwood, Alabama, another good one. For me, 6'6", 312, he could play anywhere on the line. I think he guard, right tackle, left tackle. And I think that's going to be so important when these kids get drafted. Like Vera Tucker can move around. Sewell can move around. You're going to have to be able to play guard, play right tackle coming in. You're not going to go left tackle straight away. They're just not going to put you in that position. Jalen Mayfield is another one I like from Michigan. I think he's going to come in, start day one. So just those guys for me, I just keep it real quick. And I think Walker Little's a guy. He's so far down on draft boards. I don't know why. It's like, I know he's been injured and he hasn't played much, but to me, he's worth drafting in the first two rounds. So I hope somebody, you know, takes a chance on him, and I think they'll be happy if they do.
All right. Brian, your thoughts as well.
Yeah, I think Rudder hit it on the head as far as Walker Little. I have him tied for fifth, and the only reason he's tied for fifth, is strictly because it's really, really difficult with that injury history to put him much higher, right? Especially with the concussions and, you know, some of the injuries that he's had. He's had some really unfortunate luck, kind of like Lennon Dickinson of Alabama, which I'm sure we'll get to when we get to the interior. Another guy, really, really good, but you know what? You have to take pause with the injuries. But my list goes Sewell 1, from Oregon. Number two, this is the slight change up. I actually like Darisal better than I like Slater. So I got Darisal at 2. I've got Slater 3. I've got Elijah Vera Tucker 4. And then I've got the big cat from Texas, Cosme, at 5.
Sure. I like that. I like that, boy.
Really? You got Cosme above Tevin Jenkins.
Yes.
So,
yeah, I think Cosme, I think one of the things that's really hard to evaluate when you're evaluating offensive linemen is I think it's really hard to evaluate, like, number one, I think Cosme was put into some bad situations, number one. I think Ellington, I always forget the quarterback's name, I apologize, but he holds the ball way longer than he should have. I think Texas very rarely ever provided help over there, whereas if you look at almost every other school, there's always a, you know, there's traditionally a, you know, a tight end that'll assist in the running game. Because Texas typically runs with two running backs, they don't typically have that tight end. So I think Cosme, like, his footwork is actually extremely good for a big guy. And I think he plays with a certain ferocity. And I think there's certain things that can be taught as far as from a technical standpoint. But I think certain things you either have or you don't. And if you don't have that mean streak, it's hard to teach somebody that. So for me personally, for my money, I like Cosme. The only thing that I get nervous about with some of these guys, and I'm going to include my guy as well, Elijah Vera Tucker. So there's certain things we all know, that certain traits you look for, right? Like, hey, if you're going to be an offensive tackle, you've got to be at least 6'4", right? Well, for me, if you're going to be an offensive tackle, like, you need to have 35-inch arms. And everybody pretty much knows Elijah Vera Tucker has 34-inch arms. But I think by drafting him, number one, he's already proven that he can do it, and he played at a really high level. He'd never played a tackle before this last year, and I think he only gets better. You know, and there has been situations, in the past where people with shorter than 35-inch arms have been able to perform at that level. But you look for certain traits, and I think Cosme pretty much checks all the boxes for me. And that's it's a personal preference type thing, but I would much rather have the guy with the mean streak that maybe has some fundamental flaws, if you will, as far as technique, because that's something that's going to be able to be taught. But I can't fault you if you pick Jenkins over Cosme. I just think Cosme, once again, this is a projection. I think 5 years from now, I think Cosme is probably borderline Pro Bowler.
Yeah, I agree. What I will suggest is that general managers, you only one general manager takes to fall in love with a kid, you know. And I think you look at Cosme's game 2 years ago, or Walker Little as well, both of them were projected, you know, early first rounders. I think had they come out, you know, they were too young to actually go to GoPro, but had they come out that year, they probably would have gone that high. That's how good they were, you know. And they just fell off because of whatever reasons. There's no reason. They're still juniors, so there's no reason why they can't gain that back. And I think a smart GM will see that, and we can see them going the first round. You know, even though they are ranked lower than everybody, it does only take one GM. We've seen it before. It happens every year, actually, doesn't it? You know.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that. I think that Jenkins, though, shows a little bit more as far as the also, as far as the athleticism side comes, that I'd like, or at least from what I saw when he was playing at Oklahoma State, I thought that he, it felt a little better for me on the athleticism side from what I saw from Jenkins. But I do agree with, so Vera Tucker's kind of the interesting case on this, is that talent going to be able to project to the next level in that way? And while I know Slater can play all three offensive line positions, I think that he will end up becoming a tackle, whereas Elijah Vera Tucker might end up becoming a really good guard as opposed to a starting left tackle in the league. When you're drafting the first round, more often than not, you're thinking this guy ought to be probably a left tackle as opposed to a right tackle, unless you're drafting like in the way back, in the back 10 picks of the first round.
At the same time, though, the Cowboys, if you remember, in the middle of the first round, took Zach Martin, who was a tackle at the time from Notre Dame, and ended up becoming a Pro Bowl-level guard, and I don't think that they would trade that pick right now for anything.
True.
No,
very true.
So that's another part of the evaluation, is the fact that, you know, unlike some of these guys, for example, like a Darisau, who I think is probably, just from a physical standpoint, the prototype for what you want, Elijah Vera Tucker has so much versatility that his floor is so high that I literally think he's a can't-miss prospect.
Yeah, I think he's an all-pro guard. I really like him as a guard.
Yeah.
Look what happened to Orlando Brown as well last year. I mean, Orlando Brown was a right tackle. paid as a right tackle. You know, Stanley goes down, he gets an opportunity to play left tackle, and now he's a left tackle in the league, and he's getting paid in Kansas City as a left tackle. It can happen. It can happen in a split second. You know, you just got it's completely next man up, isn't it? You know, you've got to be ready to switch on a dime. You know, you've got to be ready to do it. And yeah, there's so much talent in the league. If you don't do it, somebody else will come along and do it and fill that spot very, very fast. And it's just so much talent and coaching. You know, just getting a good offensive line coach for some of these guys as well. It's really gonna show how good they are, you know? It's everything, really, coaching.
Okay, yeah, so,
it's literally coaching. Listen, for anyone that doesn't believe coaching matters, if Josh Allen goes to half the teams in the NFL right now, he is legitimately in the same boat right now that the former quarterback Mitch Trubisky of the Bears is in right now. Like, he legitimately would be there. They literally saw the potential in, okay, look at his arm strength, look at the vision, look at the intangibles, look what he can become. Because in college, when they drafted him in the first round, the kid was completing 58% of his passes. I mean, that's not even passable by most NFL standards. But once again, that's why I always say this is a projection of what they are going to become, not who's currently the best right now.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And you look at the coaches that are coaching quarterbacks in the league now. They're all ex quarterbacks, most of them. They're all, you know, like Ken Dorsey's coaching QBs in Buffalo, and you know, Byron Leftwich, Tom Brady. It's unbelievable. It's just the game is evolving in a way I don't think anybody could really see, but it shows as well how much, you know, the top 5 inches are for these backup quarterbacks. Because backup quarterbacks now are pretty much coaches, right? I mean, in the way they're not good enough to play, but you're like your Josh McCowns and, you know, and those guys, they are on the verge of becoming offensive coordinators, coaches, and climbing the tree. It's it's interesting. It's so interesting.
So there's probably about another half dozen guys that are probably going to be picked in rounds 2 or 3, but I want to know what your guys' deep picks are. What guys you think are going to be drafted in day 3 that end up actually becoming long-term starters for their teams? And I'll go to you first, Brian, on this one.
Well, I don't know how deep this is, and I haven't been able to get an accurate grade range on where this kid is going to be drafted. So if he ends up being drafted a little bit higher, I apologize in advance, but I'm going to go with Brady Christensen of BYU. Every list that I'm seeing, I don't see him ranked in the top 10, top 15. So I think he's a deep enough sleeper to qualify. Most lists have him ranked around 150, 120. The thing that I look at when I look at quote-unquote deep sleepers, right, is do you have the physical traits? He definitely checks that box. And do you have the athleticism? And he absolutely checks that box. I think the biggest thing with Christensen right now is he really needs a lot of work in refining his skill set. He got away a lot, you know, in the Mountain West Conference on just sheer ability, right? Because you're not facing the same level of competition. This is one of the biggest knocks on Zach Wilson, right, is that he didn't face a ton of pressure. And why is that? Well, because when you have a guy like Christensen on your left side that's able to mirror the pass rusher, he kind of mitigates that. But once again, at the NFL level, number one, his technique needs a lot of refinement, and he is vastly his strength is underwhelming at this point. He would get literally rocked right back into the quarterback on almost every play right now. He needs to improve his functional strength. He needs to improve his technique. But that's the best you can ask for in a deep sleeper, is a guy who has the athleticism, a guy who has the size and potentially the skill set and just needs to refine the technique and the strength. And I think that that's what Brady Christensen is as an offensive tackle.
That's a great pick because I have him rank 8.
Wow, really? Yeah, I'm looking at the list right now. They have them at like 14 or 15. Once again, I apologize, guys.
It's super prepared
for the show.
It just means that I am more correct. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, absolutely.
But
hey,
no, for me,
are, once again, I watch a lot of, as you guys know, Pac-12. I watch a lot of West Coast football. And like I said, you know, you start watching tape, whether it be of a running back, a quarterback, whatever. And when other people pop off and actually catch your eye, that's something to kind of quote unquote note, because, you know, I don't go into it specifically looking for that person, but I kind of earmark it and kind of make a mental note like, hey, you know what, this guy is, he's mirroring these guys that are, you know, quote unquote first round picks of the future, or, or top level guys, top pass rushers in the Big 12 or whatever. And so it just kind of raises the eyebrow a little bit. And you realize that some of these guys have the skill set. They're just not at the finished product yet.
So my guy is Jalen Moore of Western Michigan. I think that he has that nice kick slide that works out really well for left tackles, but still has enough power to push in the run game. So that's kind of the guy that I'm looking at. I think that he ends up becoming a day three pick, maybe like when we're talking like comp pick level day two picks at the back end of round three. That's kind of where I'm seeing him, but he's a guy that I think, as far as late round guys are concerned, he's not David Bakhtiari, but as far as like fourth round guys are concerned, I think that he's in that fourth round group, I guess, of a guy who will be a long-term starter. He has some problems that, yeah, he's got that good kick slide out, but with guys with longer arms, he kind of like loses that in the shuffle, but I'm sure that he can figure that out with time. Jalen Moore's my guy. Rudy, what do you think?
Yeah, good picks, guys. I'm going to go out on a limb, right? And the Brady Christian thing is funny, guys, because I remember watching, I think it was BYU's first game of the season, and it was Barrington, Schultz at center, and Christensen. And I actually picked my phone up, right, and just wrote the three names in because of the left side, how dominant they were. And then to see how Zach Wilson has come along, and now he's the second pick in the draft. You just got to look at his blind side. He was his blind side protector. So how he's so low, he's 70, he's ranked 17th on one of these draft things. So, yeah, good for you guys to mention him, and good for you to have him at 8, James. But, yeah, I'm going to go with a guy – Kirk Ferentz, big fan, right? I like watching Iowa. He was unimpressive last year. Alaric Jackson, right? He wasn't impressive last year. He's 6'6", 320. But the thing for me was when Tristan Wirfs was there, they kept him at left tackle. They kept Alaric Jackson at left tackle, and when Wirfs, started playing well, they didn't move Jackson, and that says a lot. I mean, as a junior, he was steady in protection. And he didn't allow many sacks on your couple. He might not be the quickest, but I think like he's got what it takes to get it done at the next level. I think he can get better. So I'm going to say Larry Jackson as a big sleeper, maybe a fourth, fifth, or sixth rounder. But I think he's going to be okay, because you just got that technical thing from our Iowa offensive line, and to play as much football as he's played, I think it's going to help him eventually. And just to get a new, fresh surroundings and a good coach, seeing what Kirk Ferentz has already taught him, and just to build on that, I think it'll only be good for the kids. So I think he's going to be all right eventually. He's going to be okay eventually.
All right, we're going to move on to interior offensive line. We're going to push together guards and centers into a single category. Elijah Barrett Tucker is obviously the top guy. And I think Alex Leatherwood is a close number two in that list. But then once you get past those two, I really, really like Creed Humphrey. Creed Humphrey from Oklahoma is a guy that I just really enjoyed watching from the center position at Oklahoma. He was, and not only when he was playing in Oklahoma, but the big thing that like put him on my radar was the practices from the Senior Bowl. He stood up professional level defensive tackles and stonewalled them several times. This is not a guy that's going to be somebody that you think is going to kick outside the tackle, which is where like the value is. But when we're talking about good, solid, strong interior offensive linemen, I think Creed Humphrey is right up there with these other guys. And Quinn Marinas from Wisconsin Whitewater is kind of a small school guy that could probably find his way into that late two, early three round range that I personally think are also really great interior offensive linemen. Landon Dickerson, I'd be remiss if I did not mention him from Alabama. The injury concerns are the big thing for him. That is my big thing on Landon Dickerson, is that if we can guarantee health, he's right next to Elijah Vera Tucker as far as like high upside, really strong interior offensive line play. But I can't put him there because of that those injury concerns. Rodri, I'm going to have you go first on this. What are your thoughts on interior offensive linemen?
Yeah, at the guard position, James, I think it's going to be interesting after Vera Tucker. A lot of people thinking that Aaron Banks from Notre Dame might be there, but there's three guys, Trey Smith, Deontay Brown, and Wyatt Davis. So I have neck and neck. I think the three of them are potential future All-Pro players. You got Tennessee, Alabama, Ohio State. So there's that. There's an SEC, the high level of competition. They can all play. They're all maulers, and I think the three of them are going to be fine. Early second round, maybe the last one will get picked. But I think Deontay Brown, you can't knock an Alabama offensive lineman. You just can't knock him. I mean, they are so dominant. They've been so dominant over the years in college, especially the last 5 years. And they just keep coming through. And Dickerson and Brown in this draft, Leatherwood, they're all potential first-round picks. I think Nick Saban is going to get it done as well again in this draft. It's just going to be like an Alabama fest of how great Nick Saban is. I think that's why Urban Meyer took the Jacksonville job, just so you can get some limelight and get away from Nick Saban. But it's going to be interesting. But Wyatt Davis, another guy that slipped down for some untold reason. You know, if you want to go a bit deeper now on a guard, a guy like Ben Cleveland, who's pretty much just looked at as a run blocker. I'm looking for him to get coached up, see what he can do. He needs some help with the passing game, but got so much talent. Those three after Vera Tucker, and then maybe Aaron Banks in there as well. You know, if you look at Jackson Carman as a guard, or if you look at him as a tackle, I've done well for Trevor Lawrence, his protector. And then, yeah, you've got a bit of a knock on them then. There's some good players coming through. Agree with Creed Humphrey, James. I think Creed Humphrey's a good player. Had he come out last year, I think he might have got drafted higher, to be honest with you. I don't know if going in back in for another season was a good idea. But Quinn Maynard, and you also got Dickinson was doing cartwheels after the national championship game, just to show that during the pro day, just to show that he's healthy. You know, if you look at film of Mark Jones's pro day and just look at Dickinson doing cartwheels in the back, as if to say, look, I'm fine, there's nothing wrong with me. So he's healthy and good to go. He's going to be a good one.
All right, Brian, go ahead. Give us your like breakdown for the interior offensive lineman.
Well, I think you guys both have already like done a phenomenal job on the interior guys. So I mean, I'd basically just be repeating everything you said. I do think Wyatt Davis is definitely in there. Carmen's definitely in there. I think Smith is in there. I like Creed Humphrey. Landon Dixon is definitely in there for me. And I'll just give you guys a couple fun notes because you guys have already basically ranked these guys. So Landon Dickerson, had over 1,500 snaps in his college career at center and had one sack allowed in three seasons as a center. So just kind of further emphasizing the point you made. And Wyatt Davis, the kid from Ohio State, I think it's worth noting, you know, if Elijah Vera Tucker is the kid in the draft that's the absolute, you know, quote-unquote quintessential Swiss Army knife that can play left tackle, right tackle, left guard, right guard, and center, Wyatt Davis is the polar opposite. Wyatt Davis had over 1,200 snaps at left guard. It's the only position that he played throughout his collegiate career. Now, granted, I understand he was, you know, right next to a guy in his own right in Josh Myers, the center, who is, you know, pretty darn good himself. And I know for a fact that he's taken snaps at center. But it is something just worth noting because I look at Wyatt Davis, and I think his story is fascinating. You know, he got recruited, and I don't know if you guys know this, and I'm not trying to bore you, but he got recruited to come in and play, you know, guard. And he ended up redshirting the first year. They had guys there. And, you know, you see these kids like Justin Fields, once again, not saying anything bad about him, just saying transfers, didn't like the situation. This kid stuck it out. He stayed at Ohio State. He redshirted. He got stronger. They told him, hey, look, you're just not strong enough. He got stronger. He came back, and, you know, he turned himself into an All-American at left guard. I mean, he's – by all intents and purposes, everybody that, you know, you talk to, everybody that – all the reports you read, interviews you listen to, the kid is a tireless worker. He's a total gym rat. And I hate that expression because, you know, these are all athletes, so they all, you know, obviously enjoy the gym. But I'm just saying this kid's the type of kid that, you know, people go out on Friday night to go, you know, have a good time, and he's in the gym. Like, he's going to make it in the league strictly because – you know, of the drive that he has, and he hasn't lost that kind of small school mentality, you know, which kind of drove him to get better when basically he didn't get the starting gig his freshman year. But yeah, he doesn't offer a ton of versatility. You know, he is definitely scheme specific. He's definitely like a power run game type guy. And I know that Rodri mentioned this kid, but I did want to just say he mentioned Quinn Mirins, the Wisconsin Whitewater kid. Yeah. That kid is an athletic freak. There is not a team in the NFL, including the Niners, that run a zone blocking scheme that didn't look at this kid and think to them, start drooling. Like, this kid has the type of athleticism that every team that runs a zone blocking scheme or that likes to run a lot of like pulling guard type plays, this is exactly the type of guy you're looking for. He has the athleticism. He has the move, you know, the movement skills. He's going to get, I think people are going to be surprised, but I'm going to say that this kid actually ends up getting drafted probably in the top, I'm going to say top 50 picks within the first round and a half. He's going to go before some of these bigger name players just because of that athleticism.
I got a Mark Schlereth written as a comparison. But I mean, just because of his zone blocking, good shot, right? Good call.
All right, so there's one last guy I wanted to add to this list, because I think Wyatt Davis, I think he's gonna follow the tradition of Ohio State offensive guards that just fall right out of the first 2 days and suddenly end up being long-term stars. I mean, Jonah Jackson did it last year, who ended up being a really good find for Detroit. I think Wyatt Davis is going to find himself in the exact same situation because of his lack of quote-unquote versatility, that he's going to have a job at one position. He's going to be really good at that one position. He's going to be drafted in day three. But the one guy I want to talk about a little bit more is Jalen Mayfield from Michigan, who anchors well, who pushes off the point, who if you let him get his hands on you, he's going to be pushing you all day long. I really like Jalen Mayfield as kind of a guy that we have. I mean, I don't think he's going to be a day three guy, but he's a guy that I believe is going to be a guy who's better than his draft position. But at this point, I want to move on, unless you guys have anything else on interior offensive linemen. I want to move on to the edge rushers next.
No, I agree with him on Mayfield as well. I really like him. And there's a center called Jimmy Morrissey from Pittsburgh who I really like. I think he's going to be a good one too. But just other than that, they probably won't amount to anything. They probably will, but no, because I just mentioned them, they won't. That's how
the cookie always crumbles, isn't it? 4-3 DNs, 3-4 outside linebackers. Kwity Paye, I think, is the guy at the top of this list. That comes with. I think at the end of the day, the edge rusher guys in this draft class kind of are much more of a pick your flavor of guy as opposed to one guy is objectively better than everybody else. I like Kwity Paye as my number one guy, assuming you're running in a 4-3 defensive end style of guy. But Kwity Paye in his pro day actually showed the moves to be able to run in coverage, which I did not expect out of him, and I think that just for me boosted him higher in my my estimation than he was at before. Aziz Ojulari from the University of Georgia, number two, I think that he also has that ability to play both the 3-4 outside backer or the 4-3 defensive end. Jalen Phillips is the probably the most athletic and highest upside individual from the University of Miami, Florida. And then there's probably about a half dozen guys after that, like Joe Tryon, Gregor Rousseau, who was considered above Phillips at the beginning of the draft process, but then after not only skipping out on the 2020 season for COVID reasons, but also not showing as well as Phillips did on the pro day, kind of pushed him back. Carlos Basham Jr. from Wake Forest, I think, is also another really interesting guy in that group. And Jason Owe from Penn State, also another guy that I think could have high upside. Brian, I'm going to let you go first on this. What are your thoughts on the edge rusher class this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit a lot of information he's provided is accurate. So I have Jalen Phillips number one. Once again, as we've said 100 times, I'll say it again. It's not where these guys are at right now. It's where we project them to be. I do think he's the most athletic defensive end. I think he's got the most natural talent, and I think he's got the highest upside of these edge rushers in this class. Like you said, I think what you said was a perfect analogy, James. I don't think that we have, there is not a Jadeveon Clowney, which is a bad example I get, or Mario Williams, let's say. There is not one of those guys sitting atop the draft that or Nick Bosa, if you will, that the Niners selected. There's not one of those guys sitting atop the top of the board that's just a clear cut better than everybody else. So I do think it's kind of a pick your flavor, if you will. I have Jalen Phillips one. I have Kwity Paye, two from Michigan, three. I have Carlos Basham. I actually like Carlos Basham's game a lot, and almost had him at number two. Number four for me is Joe Theron from Washington. Maybe that's the West Coast bias. I've gotten to see this kid actually play several times live, and I also, you know, watching film on some other guys that I'm sure we'll talk about here later on. I think Theron's just natural ability, it's eye-popping. I think he, once again, this is a projection, but I think he could project into being a double-digit sack guy. That's why I have him at four. And then, as you mentioned, I have Gregory Rousseau at number five.
Yeah, for me, Bri, this is TP's time to shine as a Miami University fan. Three guys, Jalen Phillips, Rousseau, and then Quincy Roche later on, if that happens. But I always say for me, Bri, edge rushing or just sealing that edge. You know, as the game is evolving again, you need a player to put the crown of his head into that tight end or into that tackle, and you know, only a certain amount of kids can do it, and we don't really see it in their first year. You know, getting after the pass is one thing, but you really, really got to be able to do that now as an edge rusher. And I don't know how many of these kids are going to work out. It's just, it's impossible to see, I think, you know, in shorts and T-shirt. You can do it so much in college football, but the NFL is a different beast again. But I'm sure a few of them will come out. It usually takes a year or two, especially in that 3-4 system. Perhaps like Quitty Pay, I think, is better in a 4-3 for me. I mean, Michigan played, you know, a lot of hybrid stuff, but he's pretty much the only one, you know, really stepping out as being able to do that at the moment. But then, you know, look at somebody like Charles Snowden from Virginia, who's 6'7" and played a lot of outside linebacker. Can you know, is he the type of guy that can do it? We don't know. We have to wait and see. I do like Patrick Johnson from Tulane. Is another one I like. Good player. But you did mention most of the guys that I like as well. And I think I think you hit the nail on the head with those. But Greg Rousseau, another guy who's just looked at as a top five pick and now has just slid down draft boards for whatever reason. I just don't understand it. I honestly don't. And you know, it's all smoke and mirrors. As soon as our season ends, so much changes from then until the draft every season, and there's so much rubbish being written. A lot of false statements, false stories. And you know, look what happened to. I know it's just probably a bad example, but you know, a few years ago, with the tackle who had the gas mask on, who was smoking weed, and you know, playing for the Texans now, Larry Tunsil. And Pat McAfee got this great thing that says, you know, look at the lungs on that kid. The smoker bong through there. And to do what he'd done. He said he should have got drafted higher because of what he'd done. Just showing his lung capacity. So there's a bit of that in there as well. Anyway, and boys will be boys as well. I know a lot of these kids get into trouble for so many different reasons. And, you know, they got that sort of personality edge. And a lot of things that take them away from things at that point in their lives, you know, a lot of hard upbringings and things is going to come. You're going to put millions of dollars in their pocket. These coaches have got to be like father figures. They got to have guidance, and it really is up to the individual, and only they know really what's going to happen. And you know, they just need guidance. And I think being an edge rusher in the league, when you can do it, and when you've shown you can do it, then you automatically become that superstar level athlete. And you know, Miles Garrett, the Dave Young, you know, they show the way forward for these kids. And I guess we can see soon enough who got it.
Yeah, you know, just to piggyback off of what Rodri said, you know, and maybe a better example, how about Lael Collins? Here's a kid that was a first-round pick. He, all of a sudden, there's some type of police investigation where people think, like, maybe he's possibly involved in you know, a murder or some type of crime. Come to find out, he had no involvement whatsoever. He just was a person of interest that they wanted to question. He ends up going undrafted, picked up by the Cowboys, and he's been their starting right tackle ever since.
He was solid. A great example. Yeah. So much.
So
I think
So I'm sorry, I had to step away from the mic just for a moment. But I want to go at this point and ask the exact same question I've been doing for the past couple of guys. Looking for guys that we haven't quite mentioned yet, but somebody that you guys really like. And I want to start with my guy, because this is a guy I'm pounding the table for. And that is Rashad Weaver from the University of Pittsburgh, who's looking at this point to be right around a round three, early round four kind of guy. And I think there's a lot of value at the when we're talking about that first set of comp picks in round three, that late round three, early round four. We're going to start to see a lot of guys with a lot of value coming off the board, at least in my opinion. When you watch Rashad Weaver, this is a, like, I've fallen in love with this guy ever since the first tape of watching him. Go to YouTube, put on just a flat, all snaps tape of Rashad Weaver and watch his hands. Just watch his hands on every single play. He's probably got some of the best moves for a defensive end outside of the first round. And I mean this wholeheartedly. He might not be the greatest athlete around, but he can move the offensive tackle's hands, slap him down, do the swim move better than just about anybody else I've watched on tape. And I think that is the key to a very long career in the NFL. Rashad Weaver, I think, is a guy that I think a lot of people are sleeping on right now. Brian, what do you think?
Well, I think that's an excellent pick, James. I mean, I kind of threw out one. I mean, that same range, if you will. You know, I picked, my guy, which I think probably most people are much lower on than I am, which is the kid from Washington. His name is Tyron. Getting to my notes, sorry, Joe Tyron, Tryon. He pops off. He pops off on film. He's probably not going to be the fifth defensive end selected, but I think Joe Tryon is, legitimately nonstop motor. He possesses the physical tools and traits that you kind of covet and that you look for in, you know, an athlete like that. But I'll give you one other guy that, you know, like you said, like you when you watch him, it's just kind of infectious, and you have a hard time not kind of like rooting for the guy. And that guy for me is a kid from Penn State named Shaka Tony. I think this kid's, you know, he's physically gifted. He didn't perform. I don't think he performed as well as he had hoped this year, but I think he has all the tools and traits to develop into a bona fide pass rusher. And if there's one position, James, you know, not to toot my own horn, but you know, if there's one position that I've been pretty damn good at over the years, defensive end is one of those positions. You know, I said, hey, Justin Houston's going to be a first-round pick when everybody else was saying he was a top 100 pick, and he turned out to be pretty good. So I think that this kid is also going to be pretty dang special.
See, Shaka Tony, just a brief thing on Shaka Tony. The reason why he's getting projected so low right now is because he was kind of overshadowed by Jason Owe. But
correct.
He's significantly better than his current projected draft position at like the sixth or later rounds. But anyway,
and that's what I was looking at. I'm trying to look at guys
exactly,
that are drafted
yeah.
in round five or later. And I think he has a ton of upside.
I agree as well. Great pick. Rodri, you're up next. What do you think?
Yeah, well, you know, I agree with you too on the Penn State guys. I mean, that's a good shout. Rashad Weaver, what I like about him, James, he's 270 and he got room to build. So he could look at him as a 5 technique and a 3-4. You know, that's the beauty of it. It's like if you could have that ability to turn into a JJ Watt, you know, do a little bit of that. But yeah, you looking at the class as a whole, you know, again, what I said to Brian, it's a different league, the NFL, the college, in the trenches, and, you know, setting the edge and taking on those linemen, it's a different world, you know, so it's going to take them a while, but, you know, we can really only see that after a bit of coaching and after a bit of time. So, you know, you can't really, athletic ability, everybody's, you know, they're all athletically gifted, obviously, but I think for me, Quitty Pay right now is the only one that's standing out at 270, you know, 270 to 280, he's got size, and I think he's going to be a good one. You know, you've got Ojulari from Georgia.
I think we may have just lost Rodri for the brief moment. So, just to keep things moving.
You know, it's going to take a while for you.
There we go.
Like you ask the Ryans, you ask Rob Ryan and Rex Ryan what they think about it, and they'll say that. You know, they wait and see, because you've got to show it. You've got to show that manliness in training first, in practice first. But, yep, it's not. I don't think it's a great draft for edge rushers, to be honest. There's nobody really stands out to me that much that's really showing that they are a top 10 pick. I don't think we're going to see one in the top 10.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. We are down to about 15 minutes. Now, I'm perfectly fine going into overtime, but if anybody needs to pop off, I completely understand. But we're going to try to push these last four positions into 5 minutes apiece. It's going to be a challenge, obviously, but we're going to try to do our best. Defensive lineman, Christian Barmore is probably the only guy who's going to be taken into round one. I personally like, and I'm going to butcher all these names, and I apologize in advance, Marlon Tuipulotu from USC. He's kind of my number two guy. I like him a whole lot. Levi Onwuzurike from Washington. Like I said, I was going to butcher all of these names, except for Christian Barmore. those are kind of like the three guys that I see in like the first, early, second round. There's probably some other guys that are going to be in that area. Brian, let's talk about defensive linemen. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, I agree with you. I think there's two guys, at least in my opinion, that kind of separated themselves from the rest of the pack. And Christian Barmore is clearly the number one in this group. I think if Christian Barmore, and that's not to take away anything from him, but I think if Christian Barmore is in probably any other year's draft class, he's probably a fringe first-round pick. But because of the lack of quality and talent in the defensive tackle pool this year, I think he probably ends up being a top 20 pick. That's just my opinion. And then you already mentioned the kid from Washington, Levi Onwuzurike. He's a defensive tackle that, once again, he decided to sit out 2020, and I was a little bummed that he did decide to do that, because you know, he didn't have a huge 2019 year. He was solid. He looked good, but once again, you know, you really were hoping for more, but he really kind of showed up at the Senior Bowl and kind of turned some heads. And I think without the Senior Bowl, he's probably a day two, if he's lucky, maybe day three pick. But I think now, just because of the deficiency of defensive tackle this year, I think he's probably a top 50 pick. I know you mentioned my boy from USC, which I appreciate, and I think we also have to mention, I know he's a little bit of a tweener, but on third rush, especially for passing downs, Dale Ogbendeo, the kid from Vandy, he's also another guy that can play it, and then obviously Nixon, the defensive tackle from Iowa. All these guys are solid players, but the reality is you know, everybody outside the top two, we're probably looking at day two picks, and they're probably rotational pieces, at least to start. So I think, you know, Barmore and, you know, the kid from Washington on Wuzurike are probably the only two probably sure starters, surefire starters day one.
Yeah.
Rodri, go ahead.
Odigizua from UCLA is an interesting prospect. There's one prospect, right? I'm not going to say the obvious. He's undersized from Pittsburgh. Jalen Toyman, right? And everybody's like, undersized from Pittsburgh, that's Aaron Donald, right? He's not Aaron Donald. He's built exactly like Aaron Donald. And they want him to be Aaron Donald. And it's like, is he going to be able to do it? And the answer is probably no, but he's a junior. And he's got a heart. And you know, last year he was ranked higher than he is right now. And like Brian said, I had no idea why a lot of these kids, he didn't, by the way, but a lot of these kids dropped out the last year. I know COVID and there's stuff going on at home. But I mean, if you want to be a professional football player, then play every opportunity you get. I mean, you're coming into the league now and you drop in, you're losing millions of dollars because you didn't play last year, which is what college football is all about. It's in some cases, but you mentioned a good one. I just didn't understand why he did it at all. It was no reason for him to do it. And I don't know, a lot of it, you know, you worry about what's going through a lot of their heads. I know this concussion stuff and, you know, the Bosa's didn't want to get, Nick Bosa didn't want to go back to Ohio State but he knew he was a top five pick. So he had every reason to do it. And a lot of these kids, they're not even guaranteed they're going to get drafted and they do it. It's like, you wonder who's in their year, who's telling them things. So a lot of people, you know, you've got a lot of yes men when you're about to make a lot of millions. And you've got a lot of people saying some stuff to you you probably shouldn't be listening to. So just play as much as you can, I say to them. Anyway, we've got Tyler Shelvin from LSU and Kyrish Tonga from BYU. And then there's another kid, Tartarell Slayton from Florida. I think they have big zero technique. They can probably hold up in the middle. I think, you know, they got the size. Naquan Jones from Michigan State is a bit of a sleeper, but he's got talent. I've seen him make plays. I know his college. But then Marvin Wilson as well, another Florida State. All of these guys have slipped drastically down the draft boards. I don't know why they have so much. I think it's just because of the plays that was made on them in college. And also, you know, there's not a lot of other reason why, though. And it's just a poor class of defensive linemen, I think.
Well, Rodri, I do want to just real quickly piggyback. I know we're limited on time, so I'm going to keep this short, James. But I appreciate you bringing up Shelvin because in a draft class that only features three guys in the top 20 defensive tackle prospects that are over 310 pounds, Shelvin is clearly a cut above. And as Rodri mentioned, he has a ton of position versatility. He can play the three technique. He can play the zero. He can play nose tackle in a 3-4. He can play defensive tackle in a 4-3. So he could be another guy that ends up getting drafted end of round two, beginning of round three, based off of that versatility, because he is a very good run stuffer. He just doesn't offer a lot in the way of pass rush.
Yeah, 100%.
So we're going to move on to linebackers real quick. Personally, I think Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah from Notre Dame is the best linebacker, better than Micah Parsons from Penn State, who is my number two guy. Koramoah, I think, is a better coverage guy. I know Parsons has his own benefits, but I think Koramoah, as far as a football player, is better than Micah Parsons, who I have at two. Jamin Davis is the last guy who's kind of projected in that that round one range. And then Zaven Collins from Tulsa is probably going to be in that late one, early round two kind of area. And I'll throw in Nick Bolton and Jabril Cox to kind of round out those first couple of rounds. Rodri, I'll let you go first. What are your thoughts on the linebacker class?
I just think Micah Parsons is in a different league to the rest. But I, you know, I don't not to say that this game doesn't suit Koromoa more because of what we saw from Devin White in the playoffs at Tampa Bay. I think this is a copycat league. Again, we're going to see that give so much to Jeremiah Owusu-Koromoa. I mean, he's done it at Notre Dame. This guy can line up in the slot. He can move outside and line up in the slot. But if Parsons gets past Detroit, I'd be shocked. He's a tone setter on defense, and I think he can do it as a rookie. He's going to come in and have an impact at linebacker. For me, Micah Parsons, it's been absolutely great watching him play in college. He's putting Penn State linebacking back on the map, and I think he's going to have a hell of a career. And I think he's got room to go up to about 250, maybe 260 pounds at linebacker. He's definitely an inside linebacker at Detroit. I'd love to see Detroit take him. I think he can definitely do. He's a Dan Campbell type of guy, and he can definitely help that defense along with Jamie Collins right there, who he's very much alike. I think Bill Belichick will love him. Look, don't be shocked if Bill Belichick doesn't get him. But then Zaven Collins, arguably the best linebacker in college football last year. Tulsa, great player. Again, he's 260. He's weighing in 260 now, and he hasn't hit the pro level yet. So that's awesome. And then Jarman Davis, I think, will also go in the first round. I think the four of those will be first round picks, and then Nick Bolton not far after. So yeah, that's the four. And then you haven't even mentioned Dylan Moses, who's dropped right out of it. But he's that Alabama inside linebacker who Nick Saban counts so much on. You know, Nick Saban brings these guys along every season, and they all seem to do well as pros. So Dylan Moses, just, you know, maybe going in the second round, maybe later. He's had his injury. He had a really bad injury 2 seasons ago, but managed to come back, which as Brian said, you know, like a walk-on type of mentality. It's great to see. And you can put so much in behind a kid like that when you see him do things like that, come back from big injuries or even walk on. You know, you bet on kids like that naturally. Mm-hmm.
All right, Brian, what is your thoughts on the linebacker class?
I'm going to try and keep this short and simple, James, because I know we're up against it. But I 100% agree with Rodri. I think Micah Parsons, when I watch him play, I honestly think Patrick Willis, which I know is sinful to say as a Niner fan. He's probably a future Hall of Famer. He's probably one of the 10 best linebackers of the modern era, let's say in the last 15 years. Right? Like, he's that type of linebacker. I think Parsons is next level good. And that's not taking anything away from your guy, Owusu. He's a phenomenal linebacker, but when I think of Owusu, I think of more of like an Anthony Barr, or not a Barr, excuse me, a Kendricks, like a guy that's like a weak side guy that plays the pass, kind of run and chase type linebacker. So for that reason, I'm a little higher on the guys that play in the middle. So I like Parsons, I like Bolton, I like Collins, I like Davis, and then I like Owusu. And I'm not saying your guy doesn't end up being the best one of the lot. I just think that this is a phenomenal draft class if you need a linebacker. Any one of these guys, I think, will be on par with guys like Bush, and some of these other guys, Bush from the Steelers, that have been drafted in recent years in round one, even though they may not all go in round one.
All right. Yeah, so we are going to go into overtime, and we might even go deep into overtime, depending on how much time these guys got available to themselves. But we are going into overtime.
I mean, I've been doing this anyway. You know, even though it is like 3 o'clock in the morning. It's 3 o'clock in the morning in the UK, by the way. Just to say, if it is anybody listening in the UK, you know what,
that's
I would have 3 o'clock in
the morning. That's quite dedication. So tomorrow we are the regular villain show is going to be preempted by the baseball buffet for anybody who wants to talk baseball tomorrow. I don't know why you would. Baseball is awful, but if you do want to talk about baseball, tune in tomorrow. But we, like I said, we are going to go into overtime. So if you want to listen to it live, the call number is 425 or 929 477 2759. If not, feel free to listen to us on sportscitychefs.com and blogtalkradio.com, Sports City Chefs. And for now, we are going to move on to the defensive backs class. We're going to push together cornerbacks and safeties in this class. Number one and number two are easily discernible. Patrick Surtain and J.C. Horn from Alabama and South Carolina, respectively. After that, there's going to be a big dip. Like, and on tape, Caleb Farley is amazing. He's awesome. Back issues, long-term, is going to scare some teams off because of the risk factor involved. If not, then we would be talking about three top corners in this year's class. Greg Newsome, I think, is the next guy in line, followed by Asante Samuel Jr. and Elijah Molden. Elijah Molden being a guy that is probably more suited to cover slot wide receivers just because he doesn't have that straight end speed that if you were going to place him across from a guy like a Tyreek Hill, he's going to get blown. He's going to get his doors blown off. But you put him against maybe a Cooper Kupp, who's really good slot guy who also plays outside on occasion. It would be Molden will be able to cover those slot guys really hard, Pat. So those are the guys at the cornerback position. At the safety position, it's kind of a really weak safety class, to be honest with you. Like, outside of the top couple guys, it's Trayvon Mulwig from TCU, probably the top guy, followed by Richie Grant. And then, for me, it just, the bottom falls out. Like, Mulwig might go in the first round. Grant might go in the second round. Everybody else, Andre Sisco, Jevin Holland, Jamar Johnson, all those guys are late threes, early fours. So there's a one full round differential between, and probably a two full round differential between the top guys, top one or two guys at the safety position, and then everybody else. That's my opinion. Like, I think there's that big of a difference in overall talent level. Brian, I'll have you go first on this one. Go ahead and let's talk about the cornerback class. And specifically, I want to know, who do you like better between Surtain and J.C. Horn?
Well, it's funny that you worded it like that. Because I have a hard time with this because I think Patrick Surtain is the guy who has better success year one, but I think J.C. Horn is the guy who has better long-term success. But with all that said, I don't have either of them ranked as my top corner. And I know there's some injury concerns, and once again, I have to base this on a projection, nothing else, but I have Caleb Farley number one, and I don't think it's that close. I talked to a NFL corner, a legitimate corner that most people know. I had the opportunity to talk to him. One thing that I don't know if I shared with you guys, but I enrolled in the online scouting courses that Bucky Brooks and Lewis Riddick and some of these guys offer through the Scouting Academy. And I got to talk to a legitimate NFL corner, and he said, the two things you absolutely have to have to play corner, you have to have recovery speed because you absolutely are going to get beat from time to time, and you have to have phenomenal feet. Caleb Farley, and it's not close, has – the best feet and the best recovery speed in this draft. Like James said, very well could be a question mark because of concerns, But I think if everything works out and the back does not end up being an issue, you're looking at the next Patrick Ramsey. Jalen Ramsey. He is that good. He will be a top 10 cover corner in the NFL. He is that good. He is that talented. The things that concern me about J.C. Horn, because I've really dove in on the corners, James, probably more so than any other class, he's got all the physical tools. He is extremely physical, which causes a plethora of penalties. Did you know last year he was flagged on average 3 times per game for either holding, pass interference, unnecessary roughness? Like, that isn't going to work at the next level. So that's why I said year one, Patrick Surtain is probably the better play, but long term, I think J.C. Horn is. The thing with Patrick Surtain, Nick, is flawless. His technique is the best in the class. He will come in year one, and if a rookie, if I had to put my entire savings on who will be the best cover corner year one out of this draft, I would put it on Surtain. He has the best pedigree. He has the best technique. He's flawless, but he's also, of the top 4 or 5 corners, he's also the most physically limited. Think Richard Sherman. Very technically sound, but does not have the recovery speed to make up when a mistake is made. So that's my concerns with Surtain, is that, yes, he will be good 75 to 85% of the time, but this is the NFL. You're going up against guys like Julio Jones. You're going up against guys like Hopkins and some of these other boys. You're going to get beat, and if you don't have the recovery speed, it's 6. So those are my top 3. At number 4, this may be a tad bit of a shock for you, but I think the biggest playmaker in the entire draft is Asante Samuel Jr. I think if he was 2 inches taller, he'd probably be the best cornerback in this class. People forget that he had a 40-inch vertical. This kid, even though he's 5'10", and most people want to focus on the fact that he's not very long or he's not very tall, you take his 40-inch vertical and you put him side by side with Patrick Surtain or J.C. Horn, he has the same height radius as those guys do, meaning he's going to be able to contest the same balls that those guys do, which is the reason why he's intercepted so many passes over the course of his career. So I think he is going to be an absolute ball hawk, and I think he might actually end up being the best bargain in the draft at the cornerback spot, because I think it's very realistic to assume he probably goes 15 in round 2. I don't think he's going to be a first-round pick. And then number 5, and you've already mentioned it, Greg Newsome. He does everything good, but he doesn't do it flashy. And you know what? For better or for worse, you know, I look at this, and I'm just going to say, call it the Northwestern effect, because if you have so many other places that you can throw the ball because they don't have linebackers that are being drafted into the NFL, the other corner's not going to be drafted into the NFL, the starting safeties are probably not going to be drafted in the NFL, why are you going to give this guy an opportunity to potentially pick you off? Whereas when you're Patrick Surtain and you're playing at Alabama, we already know the pass rush they had. We've already mentioned the interior defensive tackle they had. We've already mentioned the linebackers that they have and the safeties. So I feel like Newsome is a guy that, like Samuel, could end up being a phenomenal value, because when you put him in that NFL uniform and you put real pieces around him, he might flourish in a way that people haven't really seen to this point.
And very, very interesting that you went on that course with Bucky Brooks and Lars Riddick. They were talking about Lars Riddick being a GM at one point this offseason. So some good tutoring there, dude. And I know, like, Bucky Brooks has been over in the UK. He's been working with Sky Sports over here. So, yeah, there's two great masters that the craft there. So that's some good teaching. I love that top 5. It makes a lot of sense to me. I agree with what you said about the Asante Samuel. I think he's at 284, at 184, sorry. He's a bit sort of quicker twitch than Farley and Surtain. But you mentioned it, Brian, and I know you know this. I know James, you know this as well. It's those bloodlines, and look at it in this corner class. You got Pat Surtain's kid, you got Santa Samuel's kid, Joe Horn's kid, JC Horn, Joe Horn. Can you imagine? Like, you got Elijah Molden, Alex Molden's kid, who's posting about him on Facebook all the time. Their fathers, can you imagine them at 5 years of age in the backyard with their dads? You know what I mean? Just showing them the tricks. So they've just a great pedigree here, great bloodlines. And I've had the same operation that Farley just had his off-season, that a microdiscectomy. Unfortunately, when I was playing rugby, I had so much nerve damage, it wasn't as effective. But I've seen so many players have it and come back. And this is going 10 years ago. So medicine now is just nothing. I think a lot of players have it and don't even talk about that little operation because it's that successful, you know, and it makes you your spine armor stronger. But going through it, I'm gonna shock the world here. I'm gonna go Elijah Molden. I think Elijah Molden, the way he played last year at Washington, he reminded me of Honey Badger. So many times he looked like the Honey Badger playing in that nickel, and I wouldn't be shocked to see him play some safety and probably go over the top. I don't know if he's a long term covering the number one, but I think he's gonna be such a big playmaker. He's gonna be like that good of a slot. He's going to be that good of a nickel corner, you know what I mean? That you're not going to be able to take him off the field. He's just going to be able to play that one side then of the field again. And I know it's weird to say, but I just feel that he can grow into that role. And I know he's not projected there, but I'm going to play number one just because I didn't play that much. I think he earned it on the field last year. He left everything on the field every time Washington played, and he had some fantastic games. And I'm not going to let that, and I'm going to respect that and put him number one. Number two, Surtain. I think he's Trayvon Diggs maybe this year, and then long term, in 3 years' time, I think we're going to see the best of him. His father was a phenomenal corner, Sam Madison and Pat Surtain at Miami. I think they were such a good pair of lockdown corners. If Dallas takes Surtain and you can put Diggs and Surtain back, and like they were in Alabama, then I'll be excited to see that. I mean, long term, that could be great. We wait to see how that plays out. But then Farley, then 6'2", 210 pounds. This is he could be. Bro, you give him a huge comparison in with Ramsey, and I'm not gonna knock you. I'm not gonna doubt there. I mean, if you say so, I believe you. And I think it's like Marshawn Lattimore again. That type of size, he can be that dominant. So Caleb Farley, 3. Santa Samuel, 4. And then JC Horn, just because of the penalties, like you mentioned, 5. And I hope he does something with a flip phone. I just hope he has a flip phone. My first interception, how cool would that be? On a first interception or something? I mean, he's not going to do it. But, yeah.
Just pull it right out of the
air. Wouldn't that be great?
First interception touchdown, he just goes underneath and grabs it from the pad underneath the goalpost, right? The first pick six.
Yeah, you probably get like the fine would be incredible. I know, maybe, but although they are starting to loosen up the rules.
If you guys have time, and if you want to jump out now, that's perfectly fine. I would like to go through a very quick first round mock draft. If you guys are both down, I'll take ones, Rotary will take twos, and because San Francisco is picking third, Brian will take thirds. Is that amenable to everybody?
I'm done with that, yeah. It's fine for Brian, I mean.
Alright, so first overall pick, I'm not going to waste any time. The Jaguars need a quarterback. Yeah, Gardner Minshew is fine-ish. He's like a top 32 quarterback in the NFL, but so he's a starter, but not a good enough starter. Trevor Lawrence, number one, Jacksonville Jaguars. Moving to you, Rotary, for number two with the Jets.
Do we get a comment on another picks as well? I'm just like,
if you disagree, then feel free to comment.
No, we'll be at about 5 in the morning if I did, but it's like, it's fine.
<You're right.
laughs> No, I like the pick. I think it's a long time coming, and I think the top two have picked themselves. It's a quarterback driven league, right? And Robert Saleh, he's going to want his signal caller, and I think the upside of Zach Wilson is enough for him to go at two. And I'm not saying it because it's been the obvious pick for pundits and for us, and it just is. It just makes sense, and he's a good kid. Brady Christensen, I think, get him as well. Take him along and partner him up with Big Back, what's his, the big kid at the left tackle. Back, you know what I'm on about. But he got protection there already, and that's what he's going to need. It's to keep his ass off the floor. That's what he's going to need early and often. And looking forward to watching him. See what he can do.
Okay. Brian, number three.
Yep. All right, at number three, I'm not going to take much time. Like James said, we'll get through this quickly. San Francisco is going to take Mac Jones. I think they traded up with the quarterback that they wanted already in mind, although I personally like Lance a smidge more. I think the traits that Shanahan looks for in a quarterback, accuracy, intelligence, and quick decision-making, being able to process information quickly, I think Mac Jones ticks all those boxes, and I think San Francisco will select Mac Jones at number three.
All right. Number four, the Atlanta Falcons are on the clock. I've heard a lot of rumors saying that they are looking to trade their star wide receiver, Julio Jones. I think they go Ja'Marr Chase. As somebody who's not really on the radar for the Falcons at four, they think maybe Kyle Pitts, maybe Justin Fields for the Atlanta Falcons. But I'm going to go with Ja'Marr Chase to kind of refresh that number one wide receiver spot that's locking it in number four. Rodri, you are five with the Bengals.
An interesting pick. No, because you left, what you've done now is you left Kyle Pitts open to the Bengals at five, but if I'm Cincinnati, I can't overlook Penei Sewell. I think he just Joe Burrow. They gotta take care of Joe Burrow, and they gotta keep him like Zach Wilson. It's a quarterback-driven league. You gotta protect him. It's great having him there. You gotta protect him. So I'm saying Penei Sewell, and for the exact reason I mentioned before with Penei Sewell when we were doing the position rankings, he's a Cincinnati Bengal as far as I'm concerned. If they don't pick him, which would be such a Cincinnati Bengal thing to do, then, I mean, they haven't even got a workout built in. So I don't know. I don't even know what's going on there at the moment. But they got to start taking care of the players on the franchise, and Joe Burrow's the franchise, the draft Penei Sewell.
Well, I am the Miami Dolphins at number six, and this is a very easy pick. I'm going to pick the player that I would have picked at three. I moved back, I collected an extra first-round pick, and I'm going to get the exact same guy that I would have selected at three, and that's Kyle Pitts. Listen, I made an investment in Tua Tagovailoa. I want to make sure that he has an opportunity to succeed. What is a better way to do that than to give him the most dynamic pass catcher in the entire draft, and a lot of people believe to be the number one player in the draft, and I'm able to select him here at number six. So I'm going to take Kyle Pitts, tight end from Florida, at number six.
All right, number seven is the Detroit Lions. They really want Ja'Marr Chase. What do they feel? They've hedged their bets on absolutely everything else. They've hedged their bets at quarterback. They've hedged their bets at defensive lineman. They've hedged their bets at wide receiver. And they've hedged their bets at cornerback. I think we're going to go with something a little bit surprising to everybody. I think they are going to take Justin Fields, quarterback from Ohio State, at number seven.
So you think Lions are taking Fields? That's interesting. Okay.
In this situation, Ja'Marr Chase is gone. Kyle Pitts is gone. Penei Sewell is gone. I think they probably trade down here with somebody hungry for a quarterback, whichever one of those two they like the best.
If they don't take Parsons in this situation, I'd be like, you know what? This is why the Detroit Lions always lose.
I first of all, I'm not that big of a fan of Micah Parsons. Second of all, if they don't trade back, don't get me wrong, he's fine. He's all right, but I don't think he's like, oh my God, I need to take this guy in the top at number seven pick. Like if they trade back to 9 or 15 and then Micah Parsons ended up being there at 9 or 15, great. But I'm going to put Justin Fields at 7, maybe trade him later. I don't know. But I just don't think they are really into the Devonta Smith pick, to be honest with you. I don't think they take Mike Parsons at 7 if they are stuck there. So at that point, you're thinking either Patrick Surtain to go at 7, being the second cornerback in a row that they've taken in the top 10, or they're going to go quarterback and have an insurance policy against Jared Goff sucking. And with the Lions at this point, I'll go Justin Fields.
Okay, I'll take, well, you know, you're fine to say that. I mean, I've seen that already. Somebody's done that. I've seen a draft that's done that already. So, you know, it's not a question. I just think they've got to get better up front and in positions of, you know, of impact positions, really. Anyway, Panthers now, they can replace Luke Kuechly finally, so they can bring Micah Parsons in. And I know Matt Rhule would love Micah Parsons. He's Temple tough. He's got a one now, but then they could really use Devontae Smith or Jalen Waddle. But I think they go Parsons just because of who he is and what he brings to that defense. I know they brought in a good defender last year. They need more bodies on defense and stars, and I think this guy's only going to be a star. I'll do a quick recap for us as well, because I'm keeping note as we're going. So we got Trevor Lawrence at 1, Zach Wilson 2, Mac Jones 3, Jamar Chase 4, Penny Sewell 5, Kyle Pitts to the Dolphins at 6, Justin Fields to the Lions at 7, and Micah Parsons to Carolina at 8. Denver's on the clock, right?
All right. So Denver is on the clock, and they're actually put in a really, really tough position here, because I think that the two positions that they would consider if the scenario played out like this, they would have liked Parsons, but I think that they, especially, you know, being John Elway, they have to consider the quarterback position here. They have a very good team. They're probably not going to be picking, you know, this high moving forward. They have a lot of playmakers on this team. A guy like Trey Lance is very, very tempting. The other position is clearly corner. They've lost corners each of the last 2 years. And it's really just a pick your poison. I don't see, if the scenario played out like this, I can't imagine them passing up on a generational talent like Trey Lance. So for that reason, you know, maybe it's an insurance policy, call it what you want. You know, Caleb Farley would look good here, but ultimately they go with the dynamic North Dakota State guy and Trey Lance, and they select their quarterback in the future.
Good pick. I'm glad we got the quarterbacks out of the way, too, because I was worried where they were going to go. But the dog agrees with us. the dog loved that pick. Whoever dog that was. You and John Elway and quarterbacks. So it's like, I'm happy that we got the quarterback out of the way.
All right. Pick. So the Dallas Cowboys are up at number 10. I'm really tempted to hit Rashawn Slater here. Like, with how much Tyron Smith has been injured year in and year out, can you really trust him to stick there for the long term? So Rashawn Slater is definitely in play here, but I'm going to go a little bit chalk and go with J.C. Horn at number 10.
Good shout. Brian, if Zach Martin, did he play much left tackle last year? I don't think he did, did he? Because they had that kid Steele playing, didn't they, for a while, and they brought Cameron Irvin in. But I think he's got the ability to. I think he's got the ability to do it. JC Horn at 10, then James. That works. Imagine that.
Yep.
What is,
number 11, New York Giants. That's your pick, Rodrigo.
They brought Dan O'Neill down to linebacker as well. And by the way, Sean Lee retired today for the Cowboys. So that's Sean Lee, the Cowboys linebacker. He retired today.
If Micah Parsons was available at that point, I might consider it. This is me going with what they might, what I think they would pick as opposed to whom I would pick. I mean, Koromoa in that Tampa 2 would be ungodly at number 10 at the linebacker position, but I just don't think they take that swing at that.
Yeah, that's a good point. Good point. Okay, New York Giants. Devontae Smith, I can't believe he's fallen to the New York Giants. The Giants are looking good. Have you seen their defense? The defensive players they got? Their defensive backfield is absolutely loaded. They're definitely a team to watch next year in that division. It's there for the taking in that division, isn't it? I think they've added some tools, guys. It's unbelievable what they've done. And I like the leadership there. I like Daniel Jones. And he just, for me, just picked the best player in the draft. Devonta Smith, Philadelphia, around the clock. Be careful, those fans will take offense to this. They come and get us. Okay, Brian?
That is you, Brian.
Lost Brian for a second.
Oh, yeah, it looks like he dropped, so... I'm going to make a. I'll make the pick for the Philadelphia Eagles at. At number was it 12?
Yeah.
So the Philadelphia Eagles. They have needs at cornerback. They have a need at wide receiver. They have a need at linebacker at this point. They need a. Do they have any quarterback? Who the heck knows? So I'm going to go with Packers Sertan.
You boy, the linebacker would be a good one now, the Koromoa kid. But just no, you Sertan's another great one. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, I'll take Sertan here. I'll take Sertan here. I could easily see Jalen Waddle being the pick. I could easily see Koromoa being the pick here. But at this point, I will pull the trigger on Patrick Sertan, put him across from Big Play Slay, and solidify that corner position long term. The San Diego Chargers are next, and that is your pick.
Well, I just think Rashawn Slater fits them perfectly right now. I think they need to get better on. Well, they can protect Justin Herbert for a start. Jalen Waddle's an option, and they need a corner also. But Rashawn Slater is a good value pick here. Probably the most technically gifted offensive lineman in the draft. So I hope Brian wasn't. The dog comment. I thought that was great. I'd love when animals just come out of nowhere and just shout to it and just bark and stuff. Because to me, that's just such a good luck thing. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So we need that dog back. You know, Brian, can tune back. come back on, Brian. We need you. And Rashawn Slater. Anyway, I'm gonna go with for the Chargers, the Los Angeles Chargers. Still can't get used to that. Although I will.
All right. Next pick is the Minnesota Vikings. So at this point, I think they have to go offensive tackle. They have other needs. They do need a defensive end, which all of them are available right now. They do need probably linebacker. They do need a guard. But I think they go Christian Barmore. with this pick at just to replace Riley Reiff, who they had to let go for cap considerations. Christian Barmore's number 14 for the Minnesota Vikings.
Sorry, was you going to pick Barmore or Darnshaw to replace?
Oh, no. Barmore is a defensive tackle. Oh, my God. What did I just do? Darnshaw.
No, I know. It's such an easy mistake to make. It's like,
yeah.
Right there. It's just, yeah, so you're going Darnshaw, right?
Christian Darnshaw, yeah. Left tackle, Virginia Tech.
Okay. Yeah, they need to replace Reiff, although they are bringing players in, and now Flynn's gone as well, so they need, when you really analyze it, like, everybody needs something. I mean, in depth is always a good thing. Sure. Okay, Patriots. Well, Patriots have got, Barmore, Najee Harris, Riva Tucker. See, without Joe Tunney, I know they brought boys in, but I think there's nothing Bill Belichick likes more than somebody who's a Swiss Army knife, and O'Brien's nodding his head at this, he agrees, because he likes multiple position guys because it just cuts his roster down that little bit more. So I'm going to go Vera Tucker. I'll go Vera Tucker to the Patriots at 15 just because of the value. I can actually see them moving. There was a tweet this morning, right? James has said that someone said that the Patriots were moving into the top 10 to get somebody. Another tweet said, and these two guys working for the same company saying they're moving down in the draft. And then another tweet saying that they're staying where they are. That's what it's like at the moment. Nobody really knows what the hell's going on. So it's just so weird. But for me at 15. And
all right, 16 for the Arizona Cardinals at this point is an easy pick because this guy's fallen way too far for this to be like fair or honest. Jalen Waddle has to be the pick here. Like, there's no way he falls this far. I would be really surprised if New England didn't take him or like several other teams. You know, the Giants could take him as the number two. The Eagles could have easily taken Jalen Waddle. Which I didn't really think about at the time. But Jalen Waddle goes to the Arizona Cardinals at 16.
That's a good pick. And, you know, look at their receiving core now.
Mm-hmm.
That's scary. Raiders need help up front. I think they just got to stop the run. They just got rid of Hurst. Is Barmore just another Hurst? Or can he be more? Christian Barmore, Cora Moore's there, linebacker. He'd be such a great pick for him. Yeah, Cora Moore, I can't see Cora Moore dropping past you. But Barmore makes more sense on the defensive line. Which one would Mike Mayock like? I know Mike Mayock would probably prefer somebody like a Quickie Pay or Elijah Moore, maybe. I don't know. He loves those nickel slot corner guys. Just because of his versatility, I'm going to go Cora Moore. I think what he can do in coverage as well. But then he ain't really a thumper, and I don't think that's what they're looking for. He's only 220. Yeah, I'm going to go Christian Barmore. I just think he suits what they're trying to do right now in Oakland. Christian Barmore.
All right, then in that case, I am going to take Cora Moore with the 16th pick to the Miami Dolphins, or the 18th pick, I mean, to the Miami Dolphins. This is right about where they, where they're at, where Cora Moore's value is speculated to be at. They've already traded for Bendarek McKinney, but they still need a additional additional linebacker. Their linebacker position has been by far their worst position on the defensive side of the ball. Cormo is, in my opinion, the best player available currently on the board. And additionally, there's not really a top-end left tackle available, which is the other thing that they would desperately need, but the players didn't really fall that way for them at offensive tackle. So I'm going to pick Koromoa at this point for the Miami Dolphins.
It's a good pick. Despite the fact that I really want to take Zaven Collins to the Washington Washington football team. I'm not gonna go there. I'm not because Caleb Farley's still on the board. That's 19. It just makes sense that he shouldn't be here right now. And if Arizona didn't take him, if Arizona don't take him, I think Washington might trade back here actually if this is the scenario. But yeah, I'm gonna go Caleb Farley, Washington, which leaves Chicago on the clock at 20.
So Chicago still needs a quarterback. They've got Nick Foles, who sucks. They have Andy Dalton, who also sucks. So quarterback is still their number one need, but there's not a player available. So look for the Chicago Bears to be an aggressive trade up candidate. Maybe the Panthers at 8, the Bengals at 5, the Falcons at 4. I would not be surprised if they trade 2 first and a second round pick to get themselves into that 4-5, 6 potentially, or 9, 8, or 4-5-6-8 range. They're not going to trade with the Lions because reasons, I guess. But there's no quarterback currently available that they would be particularly interested in. So I am going to take Tevin Jenkins, the offensive tackle from Oklahoma State, for the Chicago Bears. Pick.
Makes sense. Yeah, like you said, I just think they somehow are going to end up with Trey Lance at the end of the day. I just think the Bears and Trey Lance are destined to happen. I think he fits everything Matt Nagy wants to do. I think he fits the system. I think DeFilippo would love working with him. I just think he belongs in Chicago. And, you know, I got a good couple of friends that are Chicago fans, and I think they would love him eventually. You know, you just want to see him. Just like to see your friends win, don't you? Even because when it comes to Sunday, you know, it's good for me to just see teams of people that, you know, I know just do well. And most of them are in the NFC North as well. So it's interesting. Okay, where are we? Colts. Colts are 21. Right, they got 3 great running backs. I'm going to say great. I'm going to count Hines, Marlon Mack, and Jonathan Taylor's 3 unbelievable running backs. Offensive line, their tackle is just retired. That's Costanzo. Anthony Costanzo just retired. Braden Smith, solid on the left, on the right side. I think they go, this is where Brian's boycott, cost me, fits the system. Leatherwood can fit the system. Liam Eichenberg fits what they like to do there. And then Walker Little. I don't know. Sam Cosmi for me just fits what they like to do. 6'5", 310, Texas. The Big 12. And what they've got on him is a good bit of film. And it's somebody I think fits the mold of what Costanzo was as well. So for me, Cosme, and they can train him. Don't be shocked not to see Walker, Little, Nogoya, maybe Alex Leatherwood. Alex Leatherwood can play both sides, but I see Leatherwood strictly as a right tackle early. I don't know why, you just do. Did they move Big Q to left tackle? That's another thing that's been mentioned. I don't know if they do. No, but for me, long term, you've got to be looking at Walker Little or Sam Cosme for me here for the Indianapolis Colts. They pretty much loaded, and you know, a corner would be great for them also. But I think they need to look for the future on the offensive line, and Sam Cosme.
All right. So next is the Tennessee Titans at number 22. Right now, they just lost Jadeveon Clowney. So at the end of the day, they need a defensive end.
Well,
I'm going to take Quiddy Pay.
They signed Bud Dupree in free agency.
Signed Bud Dupree. I am not impressed by Bud Dupree. Sorry, but I'm not.
You're not. Okay.
I'm not. I'm going to take Quiddy Pay at this pick. Quiddy Pay has all the tools I like. And even with Bud Dupree, like, let's just say that they really like Bud Dupree and he's, like, awesome and whatever, they still need a second one because...
Yeah.
They still need a second guy because really the guy across from Jadeveon Clowney was not all that great either. So I'm still taking Quiddy Pay. He's dropped way too far. I would be really, really surprised.
Yeah,
made it to 22.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you're right. And just really the Isaiah Wilson pick for them last year. I don't know why. Like Alex Leatherwood now would just be the natural pick because of just replace him and that mistake. But you know, Dennis Kelly's there. I don't know. That's such a disappointing pick, Isaiah Wilson, from Georgia last year. But yeah, Quiddy Pay's a good pick. I can't argue with that. Jets. Okay, so they got Wilson in with a second pick. I think they go defense, and they need that backfield really needs help. Greg Newsom's there, Tyson Campbell, Eric Stokes, Adam Robinson. I'm going to back myself here and go with Elijah Molden just because of what he can do. I said he's my number one corner on the board. I'm going to stick with that. Probably they go corner, probably not Elijah Moore. But for me, he's an outstanding playmaker, and the New York Jets could do a lot worse than Elijah Molden. I'm going to go Elijah Molden from New York Jets, 23. Steelers are on the clock.
At this point, did Elijah Vera
took away. I took him pretty early. He went to the Patriots at 15.
All right. So the biggest need for the Pittsburgh Steelers is all the offensive linemen. Like positions, they lost both tackles to free agency. They lost their center to retirement. They lost another guard, so they need like four offensive linemen.
And also they haven't got a running back. No, I think James Conner's gone.
And they don't have a running back. So.
And all the running backs are on the board. I'm just saying, yeah. They got a lot of options.
They've got a lot of options sitting here at this pick. And they also need a quarterback in the future, by the way. But none of the top guys are available right now. I really, like, there's no tackles available. All right.
Isn't it funny though that you know they're just going to be competing next year, even though we just said all that?
Yeah,
going to be
right,
in the winner.
So because of how everything broke down in this draft, Like, if there was an offensive tackle available, like a first-round caliber offensive tackle, I would have went with that. If there was, like, an upper echelon, like, tackle-guard hybrid going on, I would have taken that. But none of those guys are available. So at this point, I'm going to go with the running back. And I don't particularly like running backs in the first round. But I'm going to take Najee Harris from Alabama, Pittsburgh Steelers.
That's a great pick. Shoot stand down to the ground, 230, 6'1". Either him or Javonte Williams. I don't like Travis Etienne might be ranked higher than both of them, but I love Javonte Williams. We didn't really go over our backs, but that's a great pick, James. That's a great pick. 20.
Jags have taken Trevor Lawrence at 1, and is your pick at 25 with the Jacksonville.
Yeah, I think they go defense. They need corner. They can also do with more than, I don't know. Yeah, tough call. But, okay, we're Big Ten. You're going to know who Greg Newsom is. Yeah, I'm going to say, do you know what? I'm going to say, it's tough to go corner, man. Yeah, I'm going to go corner. Greg Newsom, too good to get out, to fall out of the first round. Greg Newsom to the Jacksonville Jaguars is a bit of a luxury pick, 25.
All right, Cleveland Browns are next. I'm going to be honest, if there was one of those top five quarterbacks available, I would have probably taken one here. I just am not a big fan of...
Baker, really?
I'm really not a big fan of Baker, but he's not available. So I'm going to take Christian Barmore at defensive tackle.
He's gone. He went to Oakland at 17. Gone? Yeah, Barmore went. Christian Barmore and Christian Darshow are both gone.
Okay. So in Cormo was available, he would have been the pick. If Mike Parsons was available, he would have been the pick. But neither of those two guys are there. So I am going to take Kem Cortore, the wide receiver from Florida, as the pick for the Cleveland Browns.
Kadarius Toney, good pick. Good, very fast. Can come in there and play, imagine now with Odell. And that's a great pick for them.
Yeah.
They're a dangerous team. Ravens, pretty simple for me. They drafted Patrick Queen. They want somebody to come alongside him, play alongside him. I think Zaven Collins has fallen enough. They can go offensive line. Yeah, haven't lost, or they've lost. But I think they get Villanueva from Pittsburgh. I think they bring him in, or Dennis Kelly, to shore up the Orlando Brown loss. And I think they go Zaven Collins. If they don't sign one of them, look for him to go tackle. But Alex Leatherwood is actually a great fit for them. But I'm gonna stick with Zaven Collins. Leatherwood or Zaven Collins, but I'm going to go Zaven Collins. I just think he fits the mold of what they're trying to do. So Zaven Collins for me, or Alex Leatherwood, but Zaven Collins is the more likely pick, I think. New Orleans at
28. Has Caleb Farley gone yet?
Yeah, he went to Washington at 19.
All right.
Can we give him a recap?
Yeah, if you wouldn't mind doing a quick recap.
We got ten minutes here. We got Trevor Lawrence 1, Zach Wilson 2 to the Jets, San Francisco at 3, Mac Jones quarterback, Atlanta Falcons 4, Jamar Chase, Penny Sewell 5 to the Bengals, 6 Dolphins, Kyle Pitts, 7 Detroit, Justin Fields, 8 Carolina, Micah Parsons, 9 Denver, Trey Lance, 10 Dallas, J.C. Horn, 11 New York Giants, Devontae Smith, 12 Philadelphia Eagles, Patrick Sertan, 13, LA Chargers, Rashawn Slater, 14, Christian Darrishaw, Minnesota, 15, New England, Beaver Tucker, 16, Arizona, Jalen Waddle, 17, Oakland Raiders, LA Raiders, sorry, Christian Barmore, 18, Miami Dolphins, Cora Moore, 19, Washington Football Team, Caleb Farley, 20, Chicago Bears, Tevin Jenkins, 21, Indianapolis Colts, Sam Cosmi, 22, Tennessee Titans, Quickie Pay, 23, New York Jets, Elijah Molden, 24, Pittsburgh Steelers, Najee Harris, 25, Jacksonville Jaguars, Greg Newsom, 26, Cleveland Browns, Kadarius Toney, 27, Baltimore Ravens, Zaven Collins, and now we're on the Saints at 28, and you've got Tyson Campbell, Eric Stokes, you've got options. Travis Head, the end on the board.
I'm going to take Trevin Moehrig from Moehrig from TCU, the safety. This kind of turned out like the worst possible scenario for the Saints. There's no quarterback available. There's wide receivers available. They might take a reach on one of these guys at wide receiver, but it's, I just don't see a big drop off from where they're picking now and where they're picking next round.
Right.
The cornerback situation is not there either. Any of those guys who were picked above fell. I can see a cornerback here. So they're going to grab a safety and solidify the back half of that backfield. I could easily see them making a trade backwards, even outside of the entire first round at this point, based on where their needs are. But
I think so.
But at this point, we're not doing trades, so I will take Moehrig here.
Okay, 4 picks left. 8 minutes of the show left. Go through 2 minutes per pick. Green Bay Packers at 29. Kevin King left a lot to be desired. I love Kevin King. I think he'd be great, but I just think they need to move and get some help for them at least. And I think Asante Samuel Jr. is a player that they like and a corner that they like. Packers got so many options. But Asante Samuel Jr., a lot of people say when they draft the wide receiver, they don't draft receivers in the first round. Packers just never will. They always bring value later on, and this draft is so deep that they can do that again. So I think they go Asante Samuel, corner, at pick 29. Pick
all
30,
right,
Buffalo Bills.
The Buffalo Bills could not be happier with how this situation has come. Their biggest need right now is an edge rusher. Number one, total, absolute need. So I think they will go Azeez Ojulari from the University of Georgia as their pick here at 30.
Okay. That's a good pick. Another Ravens.
31 is actually the Baltimore Ravens, not the Kansas City Chiefs.
And they still have Alex Leatherwood available. So for me, it's an easy pick there. With Alex Leatherwood to replace. If they haven't signed a tackle in the week, then I'll go Leatherwood. Yeah, and they get both of the guys I thought they'd get. I could so easily see them trade up. But with Zaven Collins on Leatherwood, they fit two needs. So they could probably stay where they are and get those guys. And the final pick, Tampa Bay.
With the Buccaneers on the clock. I mean, they've kind of filled out all of their major needs. So what they need right now is a cornerback or a quarterback of the future. Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying, I think, then you know, something with a quarterback and just Travis Etienne is still on the board. just think the Ravens might be cut. I'm good. I'm good with Leatherwood. I'm good with Leatherwood. Yeah, go on.
Okay.
Didn't want
to. No problem.
Going back
so what I'm going to do is I'm going to go Davis Mills with the 32nd overall pick, just because of how everything went. They could go wide receiver as well. There's plenty of guys available at wide receiver. I think that if I were being really honest with myself, I would probably pick one of them. Rashad Bateman, Elijah Moore. Actually, you know what? I'm going to switch it up. Elijah Moore is going to be the pick here at number 32.
Okay.
I don't like Bateman that much. He just scares the hell out of me. So it's either Terrence Marshall, Elijah Moore, or Rondale Moore. So I'm going to take Elijah Moore, number 32, to the to the Bucks. Yeah, just because he will be kind of like the replacement after. Oh my God, they just franchised a guy. Oh my God, I forgot his name. Their speed wide receiver.
Oh, Godwin, is it?
Yeah, Godwin. Godwin's only at a one-year contract and is franchised. They will draft Elijah Moore back in the first round with that 4.35 40-yard dash to be the replacement for Godwin when he eventually hits free agency next season.
Not a bad call because Scotty Miller's in the slot. I don't know how long he's going to last. Mike Evans and they will need to do that. Antonio Brown is obviously not coming back because Tom Brady was at the USC on the weekend with Blaine Gabbert, and he was with Blaine Gabbert and Mike Evans, and Antonio Brown was there in a completely different group away from him. So I don't know. Obviously, end talking to each other or whatever. They end in a group together anyway. But he probably ain't coming back. He ain't coming back. So. Yeah, they can go interior line as well, Bucks. I think that Dickerson kid from Alabama is still out there. I don't know what they want to do with him. We're looking at it now, and it's like I don't know how he's not in the first round, but I can't really argue with anything we've done. But I mean, if any of the players that we just picked come out of the first round, I'm wondering why. But then you know, as it always is. There's players that Dickerson, Javonte Williams, Travis Etienne, Jalen Phillips, you know, these guys are probably first-round quality players, but hey, that's how it works.
That's the hard part is that, who do you take out if you place one of these guys in? Like, if you put Jason Owe in, if you put Jalen Phillips in, who are you taking out? Which guy are you kicking out of the first round for those players? And that's the really hard part. And I'm really kind of surprised that Jalen Phillips fell out of the first round, but it is what it is, I guess. So we will be back on Thursday, starting at 9 p.m., talking about the picks as they happen, as long as our ability to record works, I guess. Till then, Rotary, give us a final shout out, and we will close it up for the day.
Yeah, man, what a great show! 3 hours and counting. It's just great. Great to have Brian. Just yourself and Brian. I mean, I'm learning here, so it's good to get your opinion. And Brian's opinion, it's great to hear him back. Looking forward to next time already. I love what you guys have done and continue to do, and I think we're going from strength to strength here. So just great to get this one started and out of the way, and looking forward to the draft. And let's have a good time Thursday and have a good watch along.
All right, sounds good, and I will see you all Thursday. This is Controversy, signing off. Later.
Sports City, Sports City, Chefs, Chefs, Sports City, Sports City, Chefs, Chefs. City chefs is in the room, cooking up hot topics to put up on your spoon. They well in tune, bloom like a flower in June. Superman versus MF Doom, the clouds loom. So tell a friend, it's the Sports City Chefs again. Pay attention, tune in, we on the set again. Sports City, Chefs, Chefs.
Connecticut.